Blog Talk Radio.
This is Celtics Talk Radio, your weekly Seas audio magazine. Listen as we discuss the latest news for the Boston Celtics. You can call us at 347-857-3545. Now, here's your host, Daniel, Igor, and Kevin.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Celtics Talk Radio, episode 313. The Celtics sweep the Nets out of the playoffs. In what will be the final episode of the Celtics Talk Radio here at blogtalkradio.com before we move to our new platform. And you follow us at We Bleed Green Celtics Fans Forum and the Celtics Talk Radio platforms, Instagram or Facebook or the Twitter. The Celtics Talk Radio crew will recap the Celtics winning games 3 and 4 of the first round of the playoff series in Brooklyn, New York, which gave the Celtics 4-0 series win over the Nets and the sweep. The Celtics basically did what no one was expected them to do, which was sweeping the Nets out of the playoffs. And now the Celtics will move into the second round to play the Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics in the first round made both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant look bad with their stifling defense. And Kyrie Irving had one good game, number one, and three straight bad games in the series. Kevin Durant had three bad games to start the series before having a good game, but his performance wasn't enough to save the Nets to win at least one game. Meanwhile, the duo of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both have played well in the first round, with Tatum averaging nearly 30 points a game and Brown averaged nearly 23 points a game. So what did the Celtics duo prove as they outplayed the duo of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant in the series? Knowing most experts choose Nets to win the series, and yet it took only four games for Boston to send the Brooklyn home. The Celtics also got back Robert Williams after missing 3 weeks of actions due to the kneeing surgery, which will be a big boost for the second round series. How huge is that Time Lord is back? And based on what we saw from Daniel Theis in the first round, it will be, Theis who will start in the case if Time Lord is. The Time Lord is back, and tomorrow Time Lord will start for the game number 1 p.m. Eastern, Boston, NBC Sports Boston, and I think ESPN also as well, broadcasting the game number 1. Second round series, Eastern Conference, number 2, Boston Celtics, and Milwaukee Bucks, number 3, the reigning champs. The storylines out of the first matchups will be discussed all off-season. But what we will focus is that we will I will try to preview the series against the Bucks. This will be the main focus of my show. Not the Nets. We did a video chat about the Nets as well. You can check it at the Celtics Talk Radio channel and our Facebook pages. Now, Robert Williams will be back in the Celtics starting lineup for game number 1 against Milwaukee Bucks. Robert Williams has been an essential member of the Celtics starting lineup, and he is coming back from knee surgery. Ime Udoka brought him off the bench in the first two games of actions in the first round, bringing in the key player of the bench following a lengthy injury absence. He has been common tactic during the 2020 postseason. Stephen Curry played four straight games off the bench for the Warriors in the series against the Nuggets, and they won it in five, slowly inching his way up towards his usual minutes load until Steve Kerr made the switch. The Celtics ended up their first round series before Williams had similar chance for ramp up in a game action after playing a total 24 minutes in the first two contests back. However, Ime Udoka has liked what he saw from Williams during the past few days of practices to feel confidence in putting Williams back out there for the big minutes once again, it appears. The Celtics head coach told MassLive.com that Williams will be back into the starting lineup for the game number one, Milwaukee. He will be back into starting lineup, Udoka said. That's why I think it was valuable to get him those minutes in the previous series, not to jump back in his regular minutes and rotation. The first time he touches the court, it was good to get him low minutes in games 3 and 4 and get his week of preparation to build up as well. The value of Williams in this series is expected to be far greater potential impact to the Nets series during the size of the Bucks front line. They have playing the big three true bigs in their front court since Chris Middleton went down because they are starting Bobby Portis, Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo. That trio will put Boston's big to test when it comes to protecting the paint at the glass. The rest of the starters are, of course, Jrue Holiday and Wesley Matthews. Williams was upbeat about his progression from the knee surgery coming out his first two games when speaking earlier this week. No pain at all, Williams said after Wednesday practice. Knee is responding well on recovery days. It's responding well after days are hard loads, so it's good. Whether it's trying to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo straight up, servicing a weak side held defender in the matchup, protecting the paint will be key for Boston to get the best defending champs. Giannis has struggled with shooting three range with the postseason, which is making the athletic defender like Williams more valuable in the if he plans to attacking the paint more. With Williams back in the starting lineup, Tice would move back into the bench role and open up the door for 8-man bench rotation if Udoka chooses, of course, with White and Pritchard and Tice. I expect Grant Williams to play as well, so it will be probably like 9-man rotation. The Bucks have only been bringing guards or wings of the bench this postseason with Middleton sidelines. But that could change if they elect to move Portis back to the bench and start another wing for matchup purposes. No matter what happens, the Celtics will have full lineups of options on their disposal against short-handed Bucks squad that had some weaker depth already than the last year's championship team. Because Grant Hill is injured, their backup point guard, and also they will be most likely without their star, Chris Middleton, one of the most valuable players in the last year's championship run. Anyway, return to the Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown looked good, and he's expected to be back in the starting lineup for the game number one set for 1 p.m. Eastern in TD Garden after some hamstring soreness that affected him through the week. Al Horford is dealing with some of his offhand injuries, though Udoka said it's just common nick and bruise. Otherwise, anybody else is good to go. For the Celtics, Udoka said that Williams is going to back. Brown said that his hamstring issues on the lower end, but he did go through some tests during the weekend, but practices appear to be good. Brown added the extra time off, nearly a week between the games, and it was crucial to heal up from the hamstring injury, and he's cautious going forward. anytime you deal with bleeding injury, you're going to be precautious and careful, but I think I'm going to be okay. Bucks won't have the full strength. Middleton expected to miss entire series, second round with the sprained MCL, and that tough blow for defending champs, that's number two scoring option, and it goes down against the league best defense. That will put more pressure to the Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jay Roof Holiday, the other two stars, to pick up the slack. The wild card Williams played total 30 minutes in the 3 and 4 games against the Nets. Udoka said that Williams was available for up to 24 minutes each game, but the Celtics elected to be conservative in their big man return. Williams said that he felt rusty when he came off the bench, but he will get to the shape. Rob looking great. He's running, moving around well. Grant Williams said, it's great to hear no pain, and that's exciting just to say that he is an important part, and we were missing Rob while he was absent. That's initial report about the games. I will call my guest and let me hear one or two audios before bringing in Mike Dynon. Stay with us. Two short audios, then guest with us. Mike Dynon from the Celtics blog.
Well, despite the loss of Chris Middleton, the Celtics are not about to take the defending champions lightly in this playoff matchup. Here are Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum on what they're up against when they face the Bucks.
And we know, and everybody in this league knows, that, you know, they've been to the championship, they won it, they're hungry, they know what it takes, they know what it feels like, and we just got to be ready for it.
Really good team, defending champs. You know, they've been there before, they've got the job done, so obviously it's going to be a great challenge. You know, I'm just looking forward to it, it's going to be fun.
All right, Tommy Giles joining the conversation now. Guys, I think a lot of people, and listen, expectations change when the Celtics play as well as they did, especially in that first round against the Nets. But I think a lot of people, Giles, are looking at this and saying, well, man, if they don't get past, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, like, what has this season been? I look at it, I guess, I mean, saying it, I look at it a little more nuanced, sounds kind of snooty, but I feel like if they lose in 4 or 5 games to the Bucks, I'm going to be looking at the Celtics saying, what happened? Like, maybe we misread this team. But if this series goes to 7 games and they lose in a heartbreaker against a really good team with the best player in the NBA, to me, that's still progress. Are my glasses too green?
No, but I still think that would be a disappointment. Now, let me define disappointment, though, because it wouldn't be that we're saying the Celtics would be chokers or losers or how could that happen? But you can still be disappointed because this team is playing as well as it is. So that's why I do expect them to get past the Bucks, and I do see a way in which Milwaukee can win this series, but you can still feel some disappointment because there is so much promise with this team.
Yeah, and so you think about it, right? Like, they're coming off a confidence-building win over the Nets, the Bucks not having Middleton, and then the home court advantage, which hovers over all of this, right? Because the Bucks decided they didn't want to push for that 2 seed. They were okay with being the 3. You know, Celtics players have said that they're not using it as motivation, but I can't help but think it's in the back of your mind where they're like, they thought they could beat us without home court, that it was better for them to avoid the Nets than to get that home court advantage. With those 3 things working in Boston's favor, I think the Celtics should win this series, and it would be a little bit of a disappointment if they didn't, based on what we've seen. But I leave open, like, if Giannis goes supernova, sometimes you just got to shrug, and there's still been a lot of progress. And I said after all this, what they've done since January is so stupid, crazy, amazing that we can't be selfish. And this ride has to end somewhere. And if it's not with a championship, as long as there's been progress made and the future still looks bright, it's okay to embrace that.
Where do you stand, Goodman?
Yeah, I'm with both of them. I mean, honestly, I think they both made the exact points that you need to. You'd be disappointed if they don't win only because you raised the expectations so high. But you've got to look at the future and how bright it is now and the optimism that you have. But again, without Middleton, yeah, I would be, if I'm a Celtics fan, I would be absolutely disappointed if you don't win this series.
Goodman, who has more pressure on them to win this series with the way things have gone? Is it the defending champions or has it switched to the Celtics?
No, they already won one. They won one, and they don't have Chris Middleton. So honestly, they're not even supposed to win this series right now. Everybody's got the Celtics winning this for the most part because of the injury. So I think the Celtics, I don't think either team has a ton of pressure because, again, if the Celtics lose, it's still a hell of a season from where they came from. For the Bucks, every team right now has injuries except the Celtics. Like, the Celtics are finally the healthiest team in the league. It took a couple of years, but they're there.
He just jinxed it, I bet. Now someone's going to, like...
No, I'm knocking on wood. I'm knocking on wood, Forsberg.
His hammy. Jesus, Goodman, he had one job on the show. I get his point, right? Like, the Bucks don't have that pressure. But I will say this. Like, once you've been there, you just sort of expected to be there, and you're supposed to not... Like, no one's satisfied by winning one. My biggest thing is, like, how do the Celtics play from being the team that's in the power position? Because they've always sort of been that spunky underdog, even as they've sort of accelerated this season. I'm eager to see if Ime can get them into the mindset of being the dog and not the dog being chased or whatever.
I'll just add this. I think they already had more pressure on them against Brooklyn. I think the Celtics had more pressure in that series, and we saw the way they responded. So I'm not worried about them having more pressure going into this series against the Bucks.
And I think Ime is going to use the – they wanted to play us. They didn't even care about getting home court, so show them that they were wrong.
And we are live at the studio. I hope that you prepared for our guests, that you are in your armchairs or bedroom whenever you are listening to your podcast, or maybe you're walking and listening. I hope that you're having some drink, because we're going to preview the Bucks series and talk about the Nets series sweep, which was really sweet, with Mr. Mike Dinan, our friend, longtime associate from the Celtics blog. He is the Celtics fan since 1965. That means that he's longer the Celtics fan than me. And he's, of course, a very knowledgeable Celtics fan. And he's writing for the Celtics blog, and earlier for RedsArmy.com. Mike, you can find his work at Mike Dine on Twitter. Mike, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure to speak with you, my man. How are you tonight?
I'm good, Igor. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and good to talk to you again.
How do you feel after the Celtics swept the Brooklyn Nets? Did you expect that? Of course. I mean, personally, I predicted in previous episodes the Celtics hard 6 or 7 games. I really, out of the respect towards the Nets, maybe I overrated the Nets, but I expected harder resistance from the Nets. I mean, I know that bunch of the Celtics fans at my page are saying we knew it, we predicted that, but did you expect the sweep? Bottom line, it is not important. I mean, it is important because we had weak rests to heal our injured players, Brown, Robert Williams, Horford. And because of the self-confidence, right? Because when you outplay the player that, 10 ESPN so-called experts have been chosen the Nets over the Celtics, okay? And right, everybody was saying that Durant is the best player of the world. I didn't agree before the series. I don't agree right now. Personally, I would take right now Durant out of my top 10 players in the world, okay? I mean, that's another discussion for, I don't want to enter that chapter. I think that Giannis Antetokounmpo is still the best player in the NBA, you know? Yeah. And after this series, I think that it's justified to say that right now we can put Jason Tatum in the top 5 players, currently top 5 players in the NBA. Maybe it's Homer's take, but we can do that because it's the Celtics podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Tatum has proven that he belongs in the top 5. they already had the voting for all-NBA, and if anyone didn't vote for first team, they might want to reconsider that. It's too late, of course, but, you know, they had to have seen what Tatum is capable of in that series and that he is deserving of being a top five player in the NBA right now. As far as
Absolutely.
What did I feel after the Nets series, well, I'm happy that I'm on the show this week because it was the best week we could have had.
Absolutely.
Plenty of good stuff to talk about.
This is the dream year. This is the
yes.
dream year, 2022nd for the Celtics fans. But why I played, sorry for interrupting you, or please finish your thoughts, sorry for interrupting you. I will ask you a question later.
Okay, well, I was going to say that I try to be cautious and not take anything
yes,
for granted.
Yes,
and
yes, yes.
A lot of people I know, including
mm-hmm.
on Twitter, they were saying, oh, the Celtics are going to sweep. Are they going to win in five? I said they would win in six. And, you know,
yes.
the playoffs is kind of a – it's
mm-hmm.
It's a different situation in the playoffs. It's not like the regular season
mm-hmm.
where if you get a winning streak and you're playing really well, you get some games, you might win a close game or you might win by a lot. In the playoffs, you only have to win by 1 point. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You could sweep – and win by 1 point each time, they would still count it as a sweep. And that's almost what happened with the Celtics and Nets. I mean, even though it turned out to be 4-0, you know, the Nets did stay with it. The Celtics just prevented them from doing what they wanted to do so much that the Nets couldn't overcome that. You know, the defense for the Celtics, back to Tatum for a second, I mean, look at what he did to Durant. He hounded
uh-huh.
him. And Durant
had
so many turnovers and wasn't making his shots like he normally was. You didn't fear him. By the
Absolutely.
Third game, you know, he was proven to be mortal. And Tatum was just on fire. But, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's so amazing how in the game one, the end of that game, they got the miracle basket there.
Mm-hmm.
If that had not gone in,
yes,
who knows how that whole series would have unfolded.
Yes, yes, yes.
But
yes,
it
yes.
did go
Imagine.
In, and that
yes,
was the greatest thing. And then
mm-hmm.
after the series was over, this is the last point I had, that the everybody else is still playing, right? And the Celtics were finished. They had swept. I called that the sweet spot. You get to sit back and know that your team is in the next round already and everybody else is still nervous about what's going to happen with them.
I have, this is kind of skipping the subject, but I mean, personally, I want to I don't want to waste too much time on the Nets because for me, they are the past. You know,
yeah.
they will have a bunch of problems in the off season because they have Kyrie Irving conundrum, and they are tied with Kevin Durant, and who knows what will happen to them. And because their cap is tied, they don't have the third star right now, they will have problems filling in the roster. Maybe coach will be fired, we will see, but that's their problems, you know.
Yes.
Personally, I don't care, I understand that the Nets fans are hating us, the Celtics, right now, so much after those picks and after the elimination. I have George Hill update, which is more important right now to us than the Nets. Budenholzer said that he remains hopeful George Hill, their backup point guard, could return at some point during the series. Though the 35-year-old guard isn't expected to be available for Sunday opener. So do not expect Hill tomorrow, but he missed the entire Chicago series with the abdominal strain. Now, I must say that when we, of course, before skipping to fullbacks, I mean, about the Nets series, I think that right now it was necessary for our self-confidence, because it is not the same when you run over the Nets with the two stars, you know. And right now the people are seeing, like you said, Jason Tatum different, the Celtics team different, Marcus Smart get the award, Udoka should be in the best coach of the year discussion, of course, after what he did in the second part of this season. And this is his rookie year in the NBA as a head coach, remember. So, I mean, the NBA world, after the defeating the Nets after the round number one, is looking at the Celtics a different way. I played, Mike, the two audios of Goodman and Forsberg, if I'm correct, in which they discussed who is the favorite of the series. That's the Celtics. I mean, we will come to prognosis later on the show. This is not now the subject, but Goodman said that everybody, after Chris Middleton is out, and I read that Hill could be out 2-3 games, maybe the entire season. I mean, about the Hill, he's their backup point guard. He's experienced. He's providing them ball handling, good organization of the offense after, at the minutes without Jrue Holiday. Now, they are playing, if I'm correct, Justin Carter, who is not as much experienced as George Hill. But actually, they are running a bunch of, wings and big guys, even off the bench. Grayson Allen emerged as their third scorer in the absence of Middleton. We will talk a little about absence of Middleton. They, during the season, dealing with bunch of injuries. Lopez was out. Holiday a little, Giannis a little. Then Middleton was absent also. And they inserted Wesley Matthews in the starting lineups, and they put Bobby Portis off the bench, also Grayson Allen off the bench, because Budenholzer established the second unit consisted of Bobby Portis, George Hill, Grayson Allen, Carter, and whomever, Pat Connaughton, to say, that unit to be very effective off the bench, you know, defense and offense. Right now, he cannot construct that bench, of course. Wesley Matthews, if we are not seeing some surprises and changes due to the matchups, even though I do not expect anything to change. So if the things are normal, they would start Antetokounmpo, Wesley Matthews, Jrue Holiday, Brook Lopez, and Chris Middleton. And off the bench, you would have George Hill, Portis, Grayson Allen, then Javon Carter, and whomever, Pat Connaughton, you know, and let's say Ibaka. Ibaka is playing like 5, 6, 10 minutes, as much as it's necessary, okay? So they cannot do that, and they are starting really big lineup. In the NBA, you have the trend of playing the small ball lineups. The Celtics get back to the big lineup, and personally, I have been keeping the debate here at the Celtics Talk Radio for years about small ball lineups and the big lineups in the NBA. And the people have been persuading me that it is the era of small ball lineups and that big lineups cannot be established and cannot work in the NBA anymore. And I disagreed. And one of the teams, the two teams that proved me right, and I'm happy about it, among the others, they are not the only ones. Look at Denver Nuggets, for example. Memphis, for example, that you watched Memphis, and they are having excellent big guys, you know. But the Celtics returned to playing the true big guys. They have, you know, Al Horford, Robert Williams. They have Daniel Tice. Grant Williams is small, okay. He's not the true center. But Milwaukee, they are playing the three big guys in the starting lineup. Antetokounmpo, then Brook Lopez, and Bobby Portis. Plus, they have size at the bench. I mean, like I said, Ibaka is there, Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton. I mean, Javon Carter, all of them has really, really good size and wingspan. It's it's a high team. It's the construction of the team is like that. Okay. So against the Bucks, it's just my opinion, Mr. Mike, and sorry for being too long. I hope that I am not bugging you.
No.
You know, I'm just explaining the Bucks situation. Against them, it will not be perimeter game. It will not be, you know, high-paced game. It will not be running the offense throughout the fast break, secondary attack, and that kind of stuff. Against Milwaukee, you know, the paint defense, it will be bloodbath and the dog fight in the paint, okay, among the others. And I will stop there. Your opinion.
As to how the series is going to play out?
I mean about what I said. You can take whatever you wish. What is your impression about, I mentioned the small lineup and the big lineup, you know, against, for example, my question, for example, against the Nets, you have the plan to stop Kevin Durant, okay? You can double-team him, we can switch on him, right. The other option is Kyrie. Kyrie can be fit with you, but Kyrie is not reliable, okay? If he is having a night off and you are stopping Kevin Durant, they don't have without James Harden the option number three, and it hurts them. Against the Bucks, they don't have option number two. It will hurt them, okay? But they have the guys that are, you know, living out of Giannis Antetokounmpo passes at the perimeter. And they can really hurt you with the three-point shooting if you do not play good perimeter defense, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing is with the Bucks, they're going to miss Middleton. That's a given. He, and especially since he always seems to play extra well against the Celtics. But, you know, the challenge is going to be what to do about Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
And then related to that is, even though Middleton isn't playing, the Bucks still have some good outside shooters and can make threes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to kind of try to figure out a way to guard Giannis without having to double-team him and leaving their shooters open. Because, like you mentioned, Grayson Allen, he started most of the year for them. And then for whatever reason, they switched up their lineup, and he was coming off the bench against Chicago. And he averaged, in the three games that he played after Middleton went out, Allen averaged 21 points, and he shot 70% from three. He was just unconscious in his own. So that's not going to last, that kind of percentage. But still, mm-hmm. you can see that he is capable of putting up numbers like that.
If you leave him open.
Yeah, if you leave him open, right. And Chicago, of course, they were limited too because they had injuries, and their mm-hmm. defense is nowhere near what the Celtics is. So that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Can the Celtics stop Giannis, or at least, you're not going to stop him, but at least keep him somewhat contained, keep him to his normal, and don't let him go off for 40? Can they do that without exposing themselves on the perimeter? So fortunately, the Celtics have Horford and Tice and Rob. Rob being back is big. And each one of them can take Giannis and, rotate people on him. I expect Tatum also will guard him once in a while. Rotate mm-hmm. people on him and spread out fouls and give him a different look from each guy. And we'll just have to see how it goes. That's mm-hmm. my opinion as to how to guard him. And mm-hmm. what he does mm-hmm. affects everyone else. And the thing is, you don't want to lose because you give up too much to everybody else. Mm-hmm. If you say that Giannis is going to get his, and you just don't let everybody else take advantage of that, you limit them enough so that they're not effective like they would normally be, then you have a good chance to win. And, we'll see how the Grayson Allens of the Bucks respond to having a lot more pressure on them, not just in terms of defense, but also because they're now into the second round. And mm-hmm. the Celtics had more of a test in the first round than the Bucks did. And now the Bucks don't have home court advantage either. So I feel good about the Celtics' chances here.
Mm-hmm.
If they had Middleton, it would be much more difficult.
Yes,
but since they don't, that's how it's got to go. And so you just don't want to let the other players beat you.
I want to expand on the Middleton. Chris Middleton, Hoops Empire, said, to put plain and simple, Middleton was the Bucks' closer in their championship run last year for the most part. Middleton led not just the Bucks, but the NBA playoff field in clutch points and the shoot attempts. He's a massive piece to their offense and will be sorely missed. This season, the Bucks' offense rating dropped from 116.6 to 112.8 without him. The difference between number one and number 13th offense. Last playoffs, the Bucks had 114.8 offensive rating with him on the floor and 106.7 offensive rating without him on the floor. That's 8.1 less offensive rating without him. That's major difference. I will return to the other pieces that will play against us. But in the game two against the Bulls, Middleton slipped out the wet spot and suffered grade 2 MCL. He didn't play, and he will miss the series against the Celtics. Middleton was the Bucks' primary offensive option this season, with 20.1 points and to say number two behind Giannis, okay. 20, but number one closer, in the clutch, like I said. 20.1 points and 5.4 assists per game. Losing that raw production is bad. It's possible for other players to step up, as we mentioned, Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, Javon Carter, Hill, if returned, whomever. But the Bucks won't be able to replace Middleton's ability to create the shoot for himself and make the tough shoots in isolation. That's a major problem because the Celtics have number one defense in the NBA. And the Celtics don't switch heavily everything, switching everything defense that is taking away initial action. And the Celtics are forcing opponents to go one-on-one against them. Middleton was the best option one-on-one that Bucks are having against the Celtics offense, okay? he can consistently get a decent look in this situation, and he won't be there. Middleton injury will be felt most on the offensive end, but also it will figure out the more the, it will create the problems for the Bucks on the defense. While Middleton, you will say how, because Middleton is not the best defender in the world, right? But good luck earning that honor to the team with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jrue Holiday. He's no a slash. More importantly, I mean, he's the wing, big wing defender, and they would put him against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, without him, I mean, in the starting lineup, Mr. Mike, you will probably have to put on Tatum like Wesley Matthews guy, you know? And if you think about it, the difference between Chris Middleton and Wesley Matthews on Jason Tatum, I mean, I would pick Chris Middleton any night and day, right?
Hmm. If Wesley Matthews tries to guard Jason Tatum, I'll go for that. I'll go for that any time. That would be a disaster for them.
Absolutely.
If they don't have, let's say, Giannis take Tatum, then I think Portis or Jrue Holiday would be the guy. Because Holiday is kind of like Smart in the sense that he wouldn't match up with the height, but he would with the toughness and the defensive ability, because he's one of the top defenders also in the league. And Portis, he's kind of a wild card, kind of a wild man, sort of. He's a very emotional player. And he gets into it with the other team sometimes. I think they almost had a little skirmish one game in the Bulls series. And he's a pretty good shooter, too, from the outside. So I think he might have some time on Tatum. But it would be interesting if Giannis and Tatum guarded each other. That would probably not be a good idea for the Celtics, because then Tatum would get in foul trouble. But just to see that matchup would be interesting. They both have so much talent.
I would want to avoid that Tatum guarding Giannis as well.
Yeah.
I think that personally, if I'm the coach and I'm not, Udoka is much smarter than me, of course. I would, right. I mean, I would not try to overhelp on Giannis and try to stop Giannis. I would try to stop the perimeter offense. Like I said, our switches in the paint and our solutions in the defense, or how we are guarding the pick and roll. Are we scrambling on, are we, you know, just sagging off the roll man, or are we switching everything, or are we double team the Giannis and the other guys on the drives? Those solutions will decide the series, in my opinion, I wanted to say. Plus, how we are defending the perimeter. We must switch everything, because without Middleton, like I said, we are they don't have one-on-one, best one-on-one offensive player in the roster, right, in Middleton. But they will run whenever they are getting the possession, whenever they are stealing the ball. They will run with Giannis and his you know, long steps. And when you overhelp on Giannis, he will pass, and they are running five out formation, or one in, four out formation, and you know, one pass, two passes, and open three is coming. That's their, you know, bread and butter offense. Drive, kick, dish, three. So how are you defending the drives and the pick and roll inside? And also, how you close the perimeter is very important. Returning to the Middleton, I have some interesting information, Mr. Mike. Middleton has faced the Celtics in the two playoff series, and he's shooting 51.6% against the Celtics, and he's averaged 22.4 points per game against the Celtics. So another reason to, sign off, because Middleton loves to play the Celtics somehow.
Yeah.
You know, right. Especially in the playoffs. Finishing with this story, do you want something to say?
Well, Middleton, what you were saying reminded me of something.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Grayson Allen, for example. Grayson Allen took over the scoring duties of him in Chicago series, and they made adjustments, and they closed. They really looked impressive in those games without him against Chicago. But Chicago is having problems with injuries as well. And Chicago is not the best playoff team, in my opinion, at the Eastern Conference, despite solid regular season. I never considered them the contending team, you know, even when they were at the top four, position. And they were weakened with the injuries, right? But the Bucks looked impressive against them, and Grayson Allen took over the third option, scoring option behind Giannis and Jrue Holiday, but off the bench. And like you said, and he was hitting like 6, 7, 8 threes. He was hitting like, you mentioned, 20 plus points per game off the bench really easily. But the Bulls offense is not the Celtics offense, right?
Right. Yeah, the Bucks were not tested against the Bulls. Not mm-hmm. And especially not like the Celtics were tested against the Nets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why the Bucks didn't go all out to finish second, because mm-hmm. they didn't want to play the Nets, apparently. So, and it was before the games were actually played. Yeah, it was looking like the Celtics were going to have a tougher road, having to go up against Durant and Kyrie. But as we saw, the Celtics were more than ready for that. And at this point, they have every right to feel super confident and expect that they're going to win the series without any trouble. Not saying overconfident. Not mm-hmm. saying that they don't take it seriously, because they certainly would. Fans are overconfident, I think, because I see people saying,
yes.
"Oh, sweep or five games."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think six. I am hoping the Celtics can do it in six, not have to go to a seventh game. But that's why I'm confident in them winning a closeout game on the road. They just did it against Brooklyn, and if they could do that against the defending champs, that would be something. That would be quite an achievement. But I think they are capable.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, one of my biggest fears coming into the playoffs, why I was not, wait and see mode, because we were one of the worst closing teams in the clutch, like 16th or something, in the regular season. And you saw against the Nets series, we are closing the games. We are doing everything right. So it was like fantastic turnaround. So if we keep that way, we have nothing to worry about. But we lost tons of games in the regular season in the clutch time by committing stupid mistakes, right?
Right. The Celtics in the regular season still finished as one of the worst clutch teams in terms of close games and finishing them. They had one
and
of the worst records in the league.
Teams. And the fourth quarter teams, right.
Yes, yes. But that changed. You know, I mean, first of all, in the second half of the season, they were winning so many blowouts that they never had clutch games.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Nets series, as I mentioned, that first game, scoring at the buzzer to win by 1 point, the whole series changes if that ball doesn't go in or they don't get that opportunity. And they closed out every game. I don't know if every game qualified, you know, technically as a crunch time game, which is five points
five
or less
points
in the last 5 minutes. Right?
In the last 5 minutes, right.
So, but combined, the Celtics won by 18 points combined for the four games,
mm-hmm.
and that was, you may have heard this, that's the third closest sweep that there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have seemed to have figured that out, too. It's a little bit weird right now,
mm-hmm.
feeling like the Celtics are these favorites, and they are looking like they're going to go all the way.
Right.
And it's like, hold on now.
Right.
I don't want to get overconfident here. You know,
we're used to being
the plucky underdogs and playing the favorites and having a hard time. I don't know. I mean, if they come out and win the first two games against the Bucks, I mean, it's just going to be incredible. We won't know what to do with ourselves here.
Mm-hmm. You're totally correct. I mean, the fans are talking about sweeping the Bucks. I'm not saying that it would not be sweet, but I really doubt it will happen. Anyway,
I don't think it'll happen
because they are the good team. I'm with you, like hard six or the seven. If Middleton is there, if George Hill is there, I would even say that the Bucks are the favorites. But since they are not there, the Celtics are the favorites, and we should win the series, you know. And one of the things that are marking these playoffs are the injuries. And that, sadly, I mean, the Sixers will be against Miami without Joel Embiid. Okay.
Right.
Then we mentioned Chris Middleton. Then I cannot remember. Miami had the problems with Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry. Then who else? I forgot. I mean, the Chicago Bulls that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Are having
they were
injuries.
Without Lonzo Ball and Zach
LaVine
were part of the series.
At the West, Devin Booker of the Phoenix.
Right.
Denver Nuggets were without Murray and the third guy, Michael Porter Jr. Yes,
yeah.
That's why we lost. Stephen Curry had injury. He's returning from the injury. So it looks to me that the team that is going to win the NBA is the most healthier team at the moment, and luckily, that's the Boston Celtics. You know,
I said it's weird. We're not used to this.
Yeah,
we used
to
be in the hospital Celtics.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not
get too crazy here. Okay, anything can happen at any time.
Yeah.
I heard the clip
anything
that you were playing
happen.
When I came on. And I was waiting,
mm-hmm.
and they said that same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the Celtics mm-hmm. are the healthiest team now. Okay, let's not jinx anything. You know?
let's not jinx. Returning, something that you said about, because that thought will fade away from my head, how the Bucks will defend Tatum. I mentioned Wesley Matthews out of the joke, but maybe it will not be the joke. I don't think that Bucks will have like Wesley Matthews or Grayson Allen, and they will say like, okay, Wesley, go and lock out Jason Tatum, because it will be insane, you know?
Yeah.
But what they are doing, actually, they are the team that are scrambling and over-helping in the defense. So they will have Grayson Allen or Wesley Matthews or Giannis Antetokounmpo or Bobby Portis that you mentioned and I have intention to mention. And they will say, like, try to stay in front of the Tatum as most of possessions as you can, in front of the Tatum. And if the Tatum passes you, the help will come. Or, you know, they will try to double-team him, to triple-team him, or to scramble. If they see that the smaller guy is on him, they will scramble Giannis on him, for example. You know? So
yeah.
they are going to guard him by committee. They are not going to guard him one-on-one. That's what I wanted to say. At least that's what I think Budenholzer will do. But we will see what he will do. They are one of the defenses that is over-helping. So they will overhelp a lot at Jason Tatum. And Jalen Brown to extend.
Yeah. The thing there is Tatum, though, he's become capable and actually very good at working around all that. He averaged over 7 assists a game in the Nets series. So they load up on him, and he finds the open man. Then it's just a matter of can the Celtics make their shots.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Nets series, every time it came down to, like, the two games in Brooklyn,
right?
The Celtics
right.
led almost the entire way, both games. The fourth game, they never had the Nets never had a lead. And in the third game, the Nets only had the lead a little bit in the first quarter, and the Celtics led from there to the end of the game. So they spent like 40 out of 48 minutes, and then all 48 minutes in the lead in those two games in Brooklyn. And because every time the Nets got close, the Celtics hit a shot or rallied back
right.
and had two or three baskets in a row. And it was because they were moving the ball and getting wide open looks. And Tatum
right.
is
yes.
the facilitator
yes.
in that. You know,
right.
let them double team. He's inviting it practically
mm-hmm.
because he knows
mm-hmm.
he can find the right person.
That's the difference between the Celtics in the first part of the season and the Celtics in the second part of the season.
Absolutely.
If you ask me in December and January, I was pessimistic because, kind of pessimistic because Celtics look to be like the team without true point guard or the floor general, to say conventionally, after Dennis Schroeder failed experiment. Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown at that time, they looked like the scorer's first players, you know. The team was full of the players not willing to pass the ball, you know. No, I'm not saying that the Celtics are operated from the passing the ball, but they just didn't want to for some reasons, you know. And they flipped the switch in the second part of the season. And like you said, when they are double-teaming Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, I mean, he's passing the ball, just like every superstar should do. And that unlocked the another dimension of the Celtics team, like you said. You know, that's another key. Besides, they learned how to close the games, like we mentioned. That's another key for the Celtics. And about the Tatum, confidence must be soaring after performance, because he was averaged 29.5 points, 7.3 assists, 1.8 steals in the first round. He's facing better defense in the semifinals, led by Antetokounmpo, because it is not rocket science to figure out that the Nets defense is bad, and you know the Bucks defense is better. You don't have to look at the numbers to figure it
right.
out, right? But
right.
their defense of the Bucks, led by Antetokounmpo and Holiday, the best individual defenders, and Brook Lopez. You know, in the paint, anchoring the interior defense, one of the better rim protector in the NBA. So the positive is that Tatum is improved tremendously as a playmaker and facilitator with the confidence. So
uh-huh.
if Milwaukee locks him down because of Boston's strong supporting cast of shooters right now, and that's another key for the Celtics because we could not hit the ocean from the open trees in the first part of the season. And
right.
the supporting cast, when the Tatum is passing the ball in the crunch time, when he's saying, okay, I believe you guys, and I will make you pass if they double-team me in the crunch time. And those guys, you know, have confidence, and the smart Horford, Grant Williams, Payton Pritchard, they started to hitting those trees, those open trees. You know,
yep.
And they have been those four, you know, Tatum and Brown are already difficult enough to slow down one-on-one. But when you slow down Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown, they are going to pass the ball, and Smart, Horford, Grant Williams, Tatum, Pritchard will be deadly, you know, from the deep, thus far, at least, in the postseason. And against the Bucks, Mr. Mike, I think that's another key. You must hit those threes because they are going to crowd the paint, they are going to scramble, they are going to overload on the help defense, like I said, and they are going to leave you mid-range jumpers a little and open threes that you will have opportunity to use or to hit. So the difference between losing the game and winning the game, in my opinion, will be if you hit those open threes that you will create out of your possessions. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree with that. I wrote that in Celtics Block. We had a roundtable with
okay.
the writers contributing opinions and about different questions. And one of the things I said was just that the Celtics, they led the league in three-point defense as far as opponents' shooting percentage in the
mm-hmm.
regular
mm-hmm.
season.
Mm-hmm.
They allowed opponents to shoot only 33.9% from the arc, and that was the best in the league. And the Bucks, on the flip side, shot almost 37%. On offense, they made 37% of their three-pointers, and that was, like, I believe, fifth in the league. So that's
mm-hmm.
a key that we were alluding to earlier about having to try
mm-hmm.
to contain Giannis but without giving up anything on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's going to be something to keep an eye on as to affecting who's going to win. Who can win that battle up the arc? Can the Celtics hold them down, or are the Bucks going to get too many open shots?
Mm. I was talking about their style of playing. You know, the pick and roll defense, for example. That guy, Brook Lopez, he's defending pick and roll by dropping. You know, he's dropping
yeah.
on the pick
yeah.
and roll, for example, and they're having the help from the side. I didn't notice that we have the caller or the listener, and we have a couple of things to pass really quick, like defending Giannis Antetokounmpo. Let me see, is this man just listening or maybe he's trying to call us and to ask something It's 973 starting nine number. So let's see, Mr. Mike, who is this? Before, maybe this is our friend Lou. So hello.
Good evening, Igor.
Good evening. Thanks for listening. We have Mr. Mike here as a guest. So do you want something to ask him, for example, about what we're talking about?
I want to comment, of course, on the Nets-Celtics series. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, the Nets did try to hang in there for four games, I mean, they were close throughout all four games, but I think maybe that the Celtics were just too overpowering for the Nets, and that's how they were not able to, you know, capitalize any of the four games. They were just bigger and faster and whatnot, and, you know, as much as, you know, the Nets would have, Iowa hadn't won at least one game, they just couldn't measure up to the Celtics in that perspective.
Okay, thanks. Stay with us in the second part. Mike, you stay with us. I'm talking to Lou. We will have like Matt in the second part of in the second hour. So we will speak with you then, Mr. Mike. A couple of things to pass to close the story. I mean, defending Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course. Boston opened up the playoffs against Durant by throwing the kitchen sink on him early, and that definitely affected his rhythm. In just the first half of the game number one, the Celtics defended Durant with Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart, Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, and Grant Williams, limiting one of the game all-time scorers to just 2 of 10 shooting. Expect similar defensive plan against Giannis Antetokounmpo, who will likely be less affected by Boston's physicality than Durant, because he is more physical than Durant. But Tatum matchup against Durant as primary defender for much of the opening round, but Antetokounmpo overweighs the Celtics wing more than 30 pounds. So I don't think it will be the smarter plan. Either way, you can expect plenty of double teams to be flying at Antetokounmpo, who will need to find open shooters. The two times Kia MVP needs to keep an eye for Brown, too. Brown is 2.5 steals in the playoffs, and potentially Brown can steal the ball sometimes. So the biggest story is that the Celtics defense made Kevin Durant looks like a pedestrian. The Celtics' consistent physicality, length, athleticism, switching had Durant so out of the source that in Game 3 he took only 11 shots and he turned the ball 5 times. And he was frustrated, obviously. Coming into the second round, out of the biggest question is whether the Celtics will be able to slow down Giannis Antetokounmpo down the way. The short answer is probably no, but they need to limit the supporting cast to win the series. For one, the Giannis in the middle is in his prime and one of the strongest, most athletical, gifted players in the league. He won't be bothered by the Celtics' physicality because, like I said, he's 30 pounds. He's having 30 pounds more than Jason Tatum, heavyweight. So, if anything, Giannis will be willing to dish out the other way. Plus, in concern with his incredible skills, he's shown an unmatched level of self-belief and determination in the last couple of teams. The Celtics are the team, on the other side, the best equipped to deal with him. Because Al Horford, and we heard, Mr. Mike, that Al Horford is learning to be the primary defender, unlike I mentioned Tatum on Durant, and I think it's not the bad way, the bad solution. Al Horford practicing to be the primary defender on Giannis, and even late in his career, is still mobile and steady big man. On the backside, the Celtics have elite shoot blockers like Robert Williams, and to extend Daniel Theis, and Robert is healthy now to return from the surgery. And also they have wings like Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Marcus Smart, the Defensive Player of the Year, and all of them are athletic. They can switch, from the help side, and they will be able to help guarding Giannis, double team him, and to close the lines. Like I said, Brown has 2.5 steals per game. He can steal the ball, and that way you can have the counterattack. All of that still may not end up being enough to stop Giannis, but the Celtics will do will find the formula. Will have to find the formula to make the team difficult for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's really all you can ask against the future Hall of Famer. What do you say?
Well, the Celtics do already have some success in guarding Giannis. There was a tweet yesterday from Taylor Snow, who was works in the Celtics communications area, and he pointed out that in the three regular season games that Giannis played against the Celtics, that almost all of his statistics were down compared to his averages for the regular season. And not that not that Boston stopped him. I mean, I think the Christmas game, I think he had 36 points.
Yeah.
So they didn't stop him, but they were somewhat effective in keeping him in under control. And Horford being back, that has a lot to do with it, because he can guard Giannis one-on-one and do it effectively. So that helps the overall plan of not having to double-team. If you want to double-team him, do it when he is at the, like, he's starting to make his move, because he does that spin move so often in the lane. That if you time it and come up on his blind side, you can steal the ball from him pretty easily. Kind of like the one play in, I think it was game two, against the Nets, where Jaylen Brown snuck up on the backside of Durant when he did a spin move in the lane. Jaylen stole the ball, went down, got an end one. That was huge in the comeback. That kind of tactic would be effective against Giannis also. And as far as Tatum is concerned in guarding, he matched up well with Durant because they're both similar size and build and similar game. Tatum, as we already said, you don't want him to get in foul trouble trying to check Giannis. And on top of that, Giannis is probably too strong for him. He's going to go to the hoop every single time that he can. An occasional three-pointer from him, but almost all the time he's attacking the paint. And you're going to need some of the bigger bodies than Tatum to get on him. So
that's why I said I totally agree that Al Horford is probably the best plan out of the starting five to be a primary defender. Horford looks as spry as ever, and while this is no easy task, he has proven to have tough body and mass to move in the post, and he hasn't fared too poorly against Giannis in the past. But the best part is having Robert Williams in the roamer role for the rim deterrence if and when Giannis gets by Al Horford, like defensive corrector. So I think we will be fine, you know, on that role. Now, the next matchup is Jrue Holiday. The obvious answer here to guard Marcus Smart. Over the last 2 years, Smart has guarded Jrue Holiday in 110 partial possessions, and he held him to 14 points on 7 of 17 from the field, and he had 3 turnovers. Okay, so making it hard on Jrue will only straighten the Celtics' ability to score offensively. Of course, Jrue right now is the second option behind Giannis, so without Middleton. So as Jrue will likely take either one of those J's on the other hand of the floor, I suppose that Jrue will guard Brown. Outside of Jrue and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's about switching properly and keeping the eye on the shooters, something that the Celtics defense is doing well. So do you have comments about Jrue Holiday and Smart? I mean, it's obvious answer about Giroux, right?
Yeah. He's, as we said earlier, he's one of the top defenders in the league,
mm-hmm.
and I would
mm-hmm.
expect to see him taking Jaylen Brown. He could match up with Smart, but I don't know why, because Smart is he's capable of scoring. You know, we know that, but he's only if he gets hot. He's not going to. The other teams don't probably worry about Smart's outside shooting that much. So, you know, Jaylen is a much more dynamic offensive player than Smart. And so Drew Holiday would be Milwaukee's best bet on stopping him or containing him.
Now, on the offense, the Celtics shouldn't fare too poorly. The Bucks just barely cracked above average in defensive rating this season. And it only got worse post All-Star break. Now down Middleton, a slept on defender, the task is less daunting for the Celtics. The Jays, most likely matchup will be, like I said, Holiday and Matthews as a start. At least that's what I think. Holiday on Brown and Matthews on Tatum. Contrary to the popular belief that Giannis will take Tatum. I don't think it will be the case because I think that Budenholzer will save Giannis for the offense. In just the 19 partial possessions, Giannis Antetokounmpo guarded Jason Tatum the last 2 seasons. In only 19 partial possessions, and Tatum had a staggering 22 points and shot it 60%. I think that it's not good idea, you know.
I
think. So putting some length on the Jason Tatum is their best option. Yet in a playoff series, I am not sure they have good length on the wings, but they have big guys. But the Bucks have no real answer for Tatum. They could neutralize Jaylen Brown with Holiday, for example, and try to make it by whatever production Jason Tatum gives you, that hoping their offense is enough to win the game. Do you have some comments, Mr. Mike?
Yeah, well, you know, who does have an answer for Jason Tatum right now? Nobody.
Yeah,
I mean, if he averages 30 points a game again in this series, the Celtics are going to win pretty easily. I mean, you want to... If you're trying to figure out who's going to match up against him, I mean, the Bucks have Portis, and he's long. He can match up size with Tatum, and he's a pretty rugged defender. But, you know, the Celtics are going to go as far as the Jays will take them.
Right.
They have the defense, but on offense, it's got to be the Jays have to lead the way, and so far nobody is stopping them. And if they can continue that, then the Celtics could do, the sky is the limit, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing for the Bucks. Is Giannis and Middleton, now Middleton not there, so Giannis has the more burden. Now it's Holiday, but it would have been the Bucks would go as far as Giannis and Middleton could take
them. Middleton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so without him, that's... That's why they're in a bind. But still, they have Giannis, two-time MVP, and he was in the playoffs last year. Nobody could stop him. That's why they won. And that was a key why they won, one key reason. And so, you know, I just think that if the Celtics continue to do what they have been doing, you know, it's not a given, but if they can continue to do what they've been doing and they stay healthy, then they could make it all the way. It's hard to believe, really, because if you think back to where we were in December and what kind of things were happening. But it's true. You know, it's just a fact now.
Absolutely. The Celtics got a lot of good big man production last series against the Nets, but the Nets are the team without much rim presence, to tell the truth. Andre Drummond is not, I mean, and Griffin didn't play, and Nicholas Claxton is not the best rim protector in the world, despite he's having like good game one, if I'm correct, especially in the fourth, but he cannot hit the two free throws, and it is helping. But the Bucks are having Lopez and Giannis down low, and it will make a lot of harder to rob Al and Tice on the end, Grant on the offensive end, than prior series. And in the end, I would still bank on Giannis to be Giannis, despite the fact that the Celtics had the best answers for him outside of the Heat in the East. But I believe it will truly come down to the Celtics keeping the Bucks role players in check. And Tatum will be Tatum. And that's the key for the Bucks, you know, because Giannis will be Giannis, but Jrue Holiday must step up. And the guys like I mentioned, Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, George Hill, if he returns, but I would not bank on it. Wesley Matthews, you know, Bobby Portis. Those guys are the key if the Bucks want to win the series. To have bigger production and better defense than usual. And Brown, I think he will step up even being guarded by Holiday. The Bucks are the whole different beast than the Nets in more than one way, but I think that the Celtics have a good shot at any to take down the reigning champs, especially without Chris Middleton. Like I said, Hart and, you know, one information, people, one tweet, quote, I hope people realize Giannis will not be guarding Tatum. Like I said, in 19 partial possessions, Tatum scored in the last in five matchups in the last two seasons. Giannis was guarding Tatum, and in those 19 partial possessions, Tatum shooted 9 of 15 and having 22 points accumulated. So it is not good. It is not good idea. And Giannis will not have the strength, you know, for the offense. So that's why I don't think that Giannis will guard Tatum. Something to add about that?
No, I agree with that. I was thinking about as a way to look at what might happen in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about the Christmas game that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You remember what happened in that game, the Celtics at Milwaukee? Celtics were playing very well in the first half. They had a lead. I'm looking at the box score. They were up 15 mm-hmm. at the half. Mm-hmm. And in the third quarter, the Bucks scored 43 points. So they were back in it. And then in the fourth quarter, the Bucks won the fourth 27-19. Now, they never had the lead until 30 seconds to play. Matthews hit a three-pointer, as I remember,
with
30 seconds left and put them ahead, and the Celtics did not score again. Now, if you want to put that in context of what the Celtics are doing now, they would still, the way they're playing now, you could expect them to have a lead at halftime, 15 points, so nobody would be surprised if that happened. But there were no way would the Celtics now give up 43 points in the third quarter. And no way now, I think, would they blow a lead like that.
Right.
You know, if all things considered, if everything goes as normally as they have been going for the past 3 or 4 months, the Celtics would not blow that game. And that is, for me, that's something that I'm looking at as to what to expect here. And it's, on top of that, it's made more to the point because Middleton played in that game.
Right.
Yeah, and he scored 17. He made 4 3-pointers. You know, now they don't have him. So who's going to step up? So
right.
I think, you know, this is totally unscientific thing that I'm talking about here, but you know, I think it's a good indicator to me of what might happen in this series.
I want to mention only a couple of things and to close the talk. By the way, Mike, fantastic job. I really enjoyed. I hope that I was not blabbing too much, you know. But
no worries.
A lot of information to present. Bobby Portis as the X factor for the Bucks. We talk about Grayson Allen, but we didn't talk about Bobby Portis. Portis joined Milwaukee starting lineup after the injury of Chris Middleton. He was averaging 16 points and 13 rebounds across the first two starts of the postseason. He was hitting 50% from the floor and 42% for 3-point range as the Bucks cranked up their defense to compensate for the expecting dip in scoring. Bucks coach Mike Budenholzer said that when we are good defensively, that usually bleeds into our offense, and added that the team has learned pretty hard on that end with Middleton out of the commission. That certainly needs to continue against the Celtics team with so many scoring options led by Tatum and Brown. Four of Boston's five starters are average double figures in scoring. So Portis needs to step up to help Antetokounmpo and Holiday and maybe Grayson Allen to match some of the production of the Celtics starting five guys. What do you say about that, Mr. Mike?
Yeah, Portis is somewhat of a wild card in that if he plays well and if he's scoring, he could be a problem. He can make a problem for the Celtics.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm looking at his stats from the series against the Bulls, and he averaged 11.6 in 24 minutes. He can make a three-pointer. He shot 36%. And he's an effective defender because, as we said, he's got length. He's somebody to keep an eye on. The Celtics are going to have to not let him contribute too much. He could impact the game if he is allowed to get free and get confident. I mean, last year's playoffs for the Bucks, he was really a surprise for them, I think. He produced a lot more than they expected, and he was so important to them in winning in the finals in particular. So you don't want to have that happen.
Absolutely.
Here. Got to account for him, pay attention to him, and if you can keep him in check, that'll be a big plus.
One thing that I want to mention, you're old Celtics fan, our rivalry renewed. I would have mentioned that at the beginning, but never mind. When the Bucks first entered the league, they were in the Western Conference.
Yes,
and
they were.
And the first time these two franchises met in the playoffs was 1974, when they were transformed to the Eastern Conference. So the Celtics won in seven games in 1974. That really series featured the two overtime games and one of the most famous shoots of the time, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's game-winning long-range sky hook in closing seconds of the double overtime in the game number six. It also turned out to be just the beginning of the storied postseason history between the two clubs, because once the Bucks moved to the Eastern Conference in 1981, they started seeing each other's regularly. So, in fact, from 1983 to 1987, that Bird-led team met in the playoffs four out of the five seasons to the Bucks. The Celtics won the three series out of the four between 1983 and 1987. But the Bucks swept the Celtics in the second round of 1983 season, which is still one of the four sweeps the Celtics suffered in their history seven-game series. Both teams fell on hard times in various points of the decades, but in recent years, they have become the staples of the Eastern playoff fixtures. It took 31 years for them to meet again in the playoffs. In 2018, they squandered the first round. The Celtics won in seven. It was good series, but the Bucks young team, the Celtics young team as well, they ran back to in 2019. It was hard loss, 1-4, when Kyrie practically, I mean, gave up the team in...
Quit,
right. And the Bucks taking that series in five. Now they will meet again for the third time in five seasons, with both teams looking like potential title contenders, and this series looking like the Eastern Conference Finals before Eastern Conference Finals, all the credence to Heat in Philadelphia. I really rate Heat, but this is another conversation. This will be most significant matchup of the new phase of this rivalry. This is some historical present. Do you like it, and what do you have to correct from my stuff?
Well, if this series can even come close to matching a couple of the other ones in the past between the Bucks and the Celtics, I mean, then this is going to be epic. I mean, look back just to 2018 when they met in the first round. That series went seven, and that was so intense. And that was the one where Terry Rozier called Eric Bledsoe Drew Bledsoe by accident. Started the whole Drew Bledsoe wearing a Terry Rozier jersey at the game, and
it was wild.
It was wild. And then on the court was. Do you remember the first game of that series? And the Celtics had it wrapped up, they thought. It was like 1 second left, and Middleton threw in a 40-footer to tie it, and they went to overtime, and the Celtics still won. Yeah. But that series was wild. Oh, man. And it was nothing compared. You mentioned 1974, the finals.
74.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most intense series, I think, in the history of the league. As you said, there were a couple overtime games. It was a double overtime. If you
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
Kareem hit that shot in Game Six. Yeah, the Celtics were like 10 seconds away from winning the title, and the Bucks had one more possession. And Kareem hits a skyhook on the baseline from about 15-18 feet out. I mean, a skyhook from that distance. But that was his baby. That was his bread and butter, and he swished it and put the Celtics down, and then they had to go to Milwaukee for Game 7, and it was so deflating to see that happen. And you thought, oh, they can't let this get away. But they had Havlicek and Cowens and White, and they were not intimidated in the least going on the road for Game 7, and they won by 15 points, and it was a great, great game. And let me just mention that, you know, Dave Cowens, whenever you see highlights of him, there's this one play where he's diving across the floor to get the loose ball.
Right.
That's from that series. That's from that, I believe it was from that Game 6, where he got switched on to Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest of all time, ball handlers and guards, point guard. And he knocked the ball away from him. And shot clock ran out as the ball was rolling across the floor, but Cowens went hurtling after it, and you know that's like that one play sums up Cowens on defense his whole career, and so that's a famous thing. And then the sweep that Milwaukee did in '83, the Celtics sort of quit in that series. They had Bill Fitch as the coach. They won the title in '81, and Bill Fitch was kind of a hard taskmaster, they called him, you know, like a really not a player's coach at all, a really stern guy, ultra serious, and didn't give the players much leeway. And they kind of tuned him out by his third year there. And that was what happened. They played the Bucks. Celtics lost the first game at home.
Mm-hmm.
In the second game, Larry Bird was sick and didn't play. And they lost again. And then they went to Milwaukee, and the Celtics had pretty much checked out, unfortunately. it was sad to see that because it's not the typical Celtics teams that we like to think about, you know. And they ended up getting swept, and the Bucks fans were all over them. And but they came back in the next year, and I think they might have swept or at least won in five over Milwaukee, and they went on
right,
to win
right,
the title.
Right.
They went on to win
the
title.
They won
the
series. The series, right, right, right.
Yeah.
They
got
the,
Casey Jones became the coach.
Right. Right. So. Right. Right. Right.
The Bucks, they've had a lot of great moments and history with the Bucks.
Absolutely. And when I mentioned Oscar Robertson, Oscar Robertson is one of the guys that I would put in my starting five at a point guard position of all the times. By the way, you know, maybe I would put one of the Celtics guys, but Oscar Robertson is, you know, at the top of the selection, at least for me, you know, when you mentioned him. And about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, did you know one funny stat that he was great scorer, one of the best scorers of all the time, but he never... He never scored 60 points in the game, for example, during his career. Did you know that? And
I think 55 or somewhere around there maybe is career high.
Yeah, but never scored 60. A couple of things, and really to finish this segment, it was great and beautiful. Numbers to know. The Bucks held Chicago Bulls to 96.5 points per 100 possession in the first round. That is 18.2 fewer than the Bulls scored in the regular season. That is why I'm saying that the postseason is different from the regular season. In the 26 years for which we have play-by-play data, 416 teams, that was the biggest drop-off in the offensive efficiency from the regular season to the postseason. So the Bulls broke the negative record in the first round. Games 1 and 3 were the Bulls' third and second least efficient games of the season, respectively. The Celtics, on the other hand, had the league top-ranked defense in the regular season. The Celtics held Kevin Durant to just 39% shooting in the first round, sweep against the Nets. But the Brooklyn actually scored more efficiently, 115 points per 100 possession over the four games than they did in the regular season. So in the regular season, the Brooklyn against the Celtics in the four games scored 113 points per 100 possession. In the postseason, 115 points, but they still lost because their defense sucked. And it more or less, to say that way. And though it didn't necessarily feel that way, the Celtics' victory was more on the other end of the floor. So the Celtics have had the second most efficient offense in the playoffs. They scored 119.2 points per 100 possession. The second most efficient offense in the playoffs. 119.2 points per 100 possession against the Brooklyn. And while they had the league number one defense, in the regular season, they also had its top-ranked offense, 120.7 points per 100 possession. During the 32 games, we had the top-ranked offense, 120.7 points per 100 possessions, and we won 26 of 32 games in that span. And finally, the regular series between these two teams was relatively offensive, with the Celtics and Bucks combined to score almost 116 points per 100 possessions in the four games, but the Celtics defense has generally played at a high level all season, and the Bucks defense has seemingly flipped the switch in the postseason a little. And finally, the pick, fully healthy, these two teams are evenly matched, with splitting the seasons 2-2. But Middleton knee injury cast doubt on his availability to early portion of the series. He will miss the series. By the time he's fully healthy, it could be, might be too late for the Bucks. The Celtics are close to picking just at the right time with the hungry, battle-tested group of young players, the first-year coach Udoka, who is emerging and who just ratcheted up the club's collective tenacity on the both ends of the floor. The defending champs Bucks showed a little vulnerability in the first round, losing to the Bulls at home, the game number two. It could be sign of crack, and this series should go down to the wire, but the Middleton injury, it is no doubt in my mind that it will be hard for Milwaukee to overcome. Celtics in seven. You, Mr. Mike?
Celtics in six, I believe. And
okay.
As far as how they played each other this year, just a quick point. They played each other four times. And the first three times were in November and December. And the Celtics had not pulled it together at that point. And they won the two home games, and they lost the road game. That was the Christmas one. And then the only other time they played since then was in the last week of the regular season. You remember that. They went to Milwaukee, and they kept out Horford and Tatum, and it might have been somebody else. The Bucks, the Celtics almost beat them anyway with Marcus Smart and a lot of bench guys. And so, I mean, again, I think if you want to take that as an indicator, Celtics are just more together right now. Not that the Bucks aren't, but they're more together than the Celtics are. And, again, with the Middleton being out, I just think if everything goes according to plan and if everything goes, if they play to their capabilities, the Celtics, they're going to win the series. And I think it'll be in six. You got to give Milwaukee a couple of games because they are the defending champs. So, but I feel good about Celtics in six.
The Celtics. Excellent, Mike. I think it was fantastic. I really enjoyed. You really need to go right now. Sorry for holding you too long, but
no problem.
You know, when the company is great, the talking never ends. the talk never ends. So the people can find you at the Celtics blog, at the Twitter, at Mike Dinon, right?
Yes. Yes. So thanks, Igor. It's been a pleasure. I always have fun talking with you.
Great. One of my favorite guests. The best of luck to you, to the Celtics blog, and to the Celtics. 1 p.m. Eastern, NBC Sports Boston. Milwaukee Bucks, reigning champs, are coming to Boston. And the real chance for the Celtics to dethrone the king, right?
Right.
Okay, that was Mr. Mike Dinon. All the best, and talk to you, Mr. Mike, soon, right?
Right. Thanks, Igor.
All the best. That was Mike Dinon from the Celtics blog. If I am correct, we should have, after a while, Mr. Matt Rury, the number is correct. So I will try. Matt, welcome to the show. How are you? Hello.
Igor, how's it going, man? It's been a while.
It's been a while. You just heard Mr. Mike Dinon, and we were just blabbing over 1 hour. Man, I didn't even have the pause for the audience, but when the company is great, like I said, the talking never ends. And right now, it's
an hour. That's amazing. I don't think I have that for you, buddy, tonight. But I'm glad that you and Mike had a good start to the show.
No. I mean, you don't have to stay an hour. Stay however long you want.
Of course.
I just said that we were blabbing. Mike and I were blabbing more than an hour. I just said.
Yeah,
that.
No, that's awesome. That's amazing. That's a good start.
we were previewing the Bucks series, so let's right away. Of course, you are from CNSmedia.com, their program director, member of original crew, to say that way. You know, and
wow.
your the author of Careless Whisper, Celtics Live, both game shows for a long time. And man, I personally am missing you and Mr. Calvin Chamberlain as well. And by the way, I would like to hear what does he think about LeBron James and Los Angeles Lakers disappearing act this season, you know? But we will find out maybe sometimes, right?
Hey, I mean, I haven't talked to him in a very long time. It's been many years. And I mean, if you can get a hold of him, then by all means, let me know what he has to say, because it's been a few years since we've done a show together, and we haven't really spoken. So I miss doing those shows for sure. But you know, things happen for a reason. We move on, and CLNS is doing great right now. So props to them. They're still pumping it out. Bobby Manning is taking care of the post game show, and that is definitely in good hands. So I feel good about the groundwork that we laid there, you know, and I know that you know all about mm-hmm. that, being one of the first callers mm-hmm. that we had there.
Mm, right. I'm still missing your crew is great, but I'm still missing your old shows, because on those podium shows, you know, the fans could express their frustration and everything,
yeah.
you know, at us.
Absolutely, yeah, direct access.
Tasked with the Celtics and the games. Yeah, I was the caller, and I mean, this actually show. You will not believe me. This actually show will be the last one on blogtalkradio.com. It doesn't mean that we are stopping working. It means that we will move to another platform, StreamYard. But,
wow.
We will inform you about that. So this is kind of end at the blogtalkradio.com. You know, 313 shows. This is 313 regular.
Wow!
Regular.
That's
episodes.
A lot.
And I've been here what 6 years?
No, we are 10 years since 2000.
I mean, me.
Yeah, that's a long time, man. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Lou is with us. Hello, Lou. So, 6 years. So, Matt,
yeah.
Like 313 episodes and like, I don't know, 70 something special episodes. Denny's keeping the touch. Plus, we have a YouTube channel and the video production right now. So, I mean, but we will move to the StreamYard because of quality and shorter format, you know. So, Matt, man, I mean, really happy to have you here. And let me ask you first what I asked Mr. Mike. How do you feel after the Celtics swept the Nets and returned them favor from the last year's playoff, because they defeated us, if I'm correct, 1-4?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a surprise, to be honest. I definitely didn't think there was a sweep coming. I thought the Celtics
mm-hmm.
would win the series because we're more
right.
talented top to bottom. Yeah, perhaps the Nets have the best player in the world, Kevin Durant, but when you look at 2 through 7, and especially when you get into the deeper bench, if you have to, the Celtics are just a better team than that. So I thought they would win the series for sure. The sweep is surprising, but I do have to say that after game 2, when Kyrie Irving was a shell of himself, to be honest, I mean, he went off in game 1 and he was all going after the crowd, and for whatever reason, he was not the same in game 2. And at that point, I realized that Kyrie Irving probably does not want to come back to Boston to play another game. So
when they were
up just 2-0, I was kind of expecting a sweep. And the only way that there wasn't going to be a sweep at that point, after the Celtics won those first two games in the manner that they did, at the buzzer in the first one, and then just really grinding it out in the second, after they won those first two games, it was clear to me that unless Kevin Durant became the otherworldly MVP caliber type of player that he was and literally carried 10 other guys on his back,
the Celtics were going to take that in four, because there was no way that Kyrie wanted to come back and face the wrath of the Boston fans just to basically lose in a game five. Because at that point in the series, the Celtics, even though they won a couple close games and they were grinding them out for sure, they looked like the better team. They looked like they were in control every game.
Absolutely.
And they proved that by sweeping the Nets. So right now, I don't want to have that same confidence going into the Bucks series, because this is a different animal. You've mentioned it multiple times. They're the defending champs. Giannis is arguably, I just mentioned Kevin Durant as best player in the world. Giannis is right there in the conversation. So the Celtics have a tough facing two of the top two players in the NBA in the first two rounds. And if they can find a way to defend Giannis and the three-pointer at the same time from the rest of the team, then I think they'll win the series. But that's the thing, is the Celtics need to stick to their guns and play their game, which is basketball. The offense will come.
Yeah.
So I just worry that they will get in a three-point shootout with the Bucks, because the Bucks do shoot a lot of threes. So that would be my concern.
Yes, they do.
Is get in a three-point shootout, and they can't keep up. I want them to focus on their defensive game plan and scheme, because I think if they do that, then they'll win more games than lose, and that means winning the series.
You touched the Bucks series preview, Matt. The Celtics got the confidence. And you mentioned Kevin Durant, Tatum outplayed Durant, guarding him, you know, and something. So right now we are not used to this role, but the Celtics are favorites to win the series. And I think by 4.5 points to win the game number one, I don't know what
should
is the most probable score. Maybe the Celtics is six has the highest odds, but the Celtics are the favorites to win the series. Now, I played the audio of, Chris of Goodman at the first, the Goodman from CLNS. I think it was on NBC Sports Boston. But by the way, let me play to you audio, which is really short, 1 minute and 27 seconds. This is my question for you, by the way. Who has the most pressure to win the series, Bucks or the Celtics? So really short.
Goodman, who has more pressure on them to win this series with the way things have gone? Is it the defending champions, or has it switched to the Celtics?
No, they already won one. They won one, and they don't have Chris Middleton. So honestly, they're not even supposed to win this series right now. Everybody's got the Celtics winning this for the most part because of the injury. So I think the Celtics, I don't think either team has a ton of pressure, because again, if the Celtics lose, it's still a hell of a season from where they came from. For the Bucks, every team right now has injuries except the Celtics. Like, the Celtics are finally the healthiest team in the league. It took a couple of years, but they're there.
He just jinxed it, I bet. Now someone's going to, like...
No, I'm knocking on wood. I'm knocking on wood, Forsberg.
His hammy. Jesus, Goodman, you had one job on the show. I get his point, right? Like, the Bucks don't have that pressure. But I will say this. Like, once you've been there, you just sort of expected to be there, and you're supposed to not... Like, no one's satisfied by winning one. My biggest thing is, like, how did the Celtics play from being the team that's in the power position? Because they've always sort of been that spunky underdog, even as they've sort of accelerated this season. I'm eager to see if Ime can get them into the mindset of being the dog and not the dog being chased or whatever.
I'll just add this. I think they already had more pressure on them against Brooklyn. I think the Celtics had more pressure in that series, and we saw the way they responded. So I'm not worried about them having more pressure going into this series against the Bucks.
And I think Ime is going to use the – they wanted to play us. They didn't even care about getting home court, so show them that they were wrong.
Okay, so Matt, who is having more pressure in your opinion, the Bucks or the Celtics?
Yeah, I've got to agree with the CLNS guy there, Jeff Goodman. I think he hit it right on the head. I mean, the injury is a big thing. It kind of takes some pressure off of Milwaukee. But the other thing is, I will agree with him for the most part, but I do disagree in one regard. He said that if they lose this series, the Celtics, that is, it would still be a hell of a season from where they came from. And while that does make sense, I disagree in the sense that they were underachieving at the beginning of the season. Since 2022 turned the calendar, January 1st, since the last couple of months, what you've seen in the last few months, this is the way they should have been playing the whole year, in my opinion. So I'm glad they figured it out, and I'm glad that the coach has done something to get these guys. Maybe it's not just the coach. Maybe Marcus Smart is a part of it, Defensive Player of the Year. You know, maybe everybody's just finally buying into the philosophy, you know, and the talent is shining through. But talent-wise, they should have been playing this way the entire season, and it should not have been a race to number two. It should not have been a scramble to get number two. And quite frankly, they should be having a home series in the NBA Finals if they get there, but it's not going to happen because they didn't have as good of a season as I think that they could have potentially. Now, if they win the title, obviously all that is erased and forgiven. And I think that they definitely have what it takes to do that. But there is definitely pressure on this team because the expectations are high. They're now that they're living up to the talent level that we've seen and that we've projected over the course of the last few years, the pressure is on. People want to win pretty badly. So, and again, like Jeff said, the fact that the Bucks had just won the title is not maybe as much pressure on them because they already got one. And this Celtics team does not have one. And if you remember a few years ago, Jaylen Brown was saying that he was going to have 5, 6, 7 by this time or by the next couple of years. And obviously that has not happened. So I think they put pressure on themselves, and I think there's definitely outside pressure as well. But we've seen that they can shine through that at this point. And there were multiple instances over the last few weeks in that net series and towards the end of regular season where you looked at a situation that the Celtics were in and you said to yourself, last year, they would have lost this game. Last year, they would have folded. Mm-hmm. Last year, they would have fallen apart. And they have not done that yet this far. And I think they've shown a ton of resolve. So I believe that this team has what it takes to win the title. But they just have to go out and prove it. So, yeah, they might have more pressure on them, but that doesn't mean they can't handle it.
Right. Totally agree with you. I mean, there is a tendency to overreact in the Celtics land and among the Celtics fans. I'm looking at my page, you know, and we were talking with Mr. Mike Dynon that I mean the Celtics fans, some of them are saying, oh, we are now going to sweep the box and that kind of stuff. And on your CLNS you know, radio podcast with Jeff Goodman and Bob Ryan. I think that Bob Ryan said, and I recommend the people to listen always Bob Ryan because he's the man from whom, and Jeff Goodman, by the way, Gary Tanguy is the host, from whom you can learn a lot about basketball and the Celtics. And he is the voice of the reason, always. So Ryan said the Celtics fans should enjoy the season and enjoy the ride this season. In his opinion, the Celtics are playing with the house money from now on because after sweeping the Nets, and quote, it is good to dream big. It is good to dream about the title, but they should not make the end of the world. They should not make the end of the world if we lose to the Bucks. In other words, he would be relatively okay. I mean, not okay, but he would understand, and maybe he would say that the season is good. Like Goodman, if we lose the series against the Bucks, So you said you disagree with Goodman about that, right?
Yeah, that's the part that I don't really get, especially with Middleton out. I know Giannis is Giannis, but the Celtics have shown that they're the best defensive team in the league, and they've shown that they know how to defend. Even prior to this year, with Brad Stevens as coach, they have schemed up Giannis and they've defended him very well. So it's the Bucks present a unique challenge because it's not just Giannis; it's all they put 4 3-point shooters on the floor with him. It doesn't matter who you are. Name a guy on their roster; they're shooting at least 40% from the three, for the most part, the guys that get heavy minutes anyway, and they don't throw anybody out there that's worse than like 35%. So, I mean, you have to defend the entire court. And luckily the Celtics have a lot of defenders that are long and big. And if Rob Williams is even healthier than we saw in those two games in the Nets series, then I think that they have a really good shot at doing what they need to do to game plan and scheme up the Bucks. It's just they need to sort of focus on that side of things, like I said earlier, and let the offense come to them. And if they start forcing the offense and jacking up threes and turning the ball over, that's where they're going to get into trouble. But if they rely on their defense as their anchor, then I think they're going to be able to get out on some fast breaks, and they're going to be able to score on in ways that it is not necessarily a half-court thing. And quite frankly, I mean, while the Bucks do have a lot of great three-point shooters, they don't have a lot of great one-on-one defenders. So if you can take advantage of pulling Giannis out to the three-point line somehow, then you might be able to get to the rim and get some fouls. So there are multiple ways that the Celtics can find to score, but there's only one way to sort of win the series, in my opinion, and that's to shut it down on the other end. So they've got to lean on their number one defense.
Excellent stuff. Skipping to the matchups, and we discussed with Mr. Mike. First, let me read you a short the playoff picture. So, and I want your comments because we didn't comment this in the first hour. Right now, in the first round, the Phoenix Suns defeated New Orleans Pelicans 4-2. It was solid series. Devin Booker was injured. I think Chris Paul can play, right? And then Dallas, number 4, defeated Utah, number 5, 4-2. Luka Doncic was injured. So in conference semifinals, Phoenix Suns, number 1, will play Dallas, number 4. Phoenix Suns number 1 against Dallas number 4. Arizona against Texas. So then Golden State Warriors defeated Denver Nuggets 4-1. Steph Curry came off the bench in the 4 games returning from the injury. Denver without Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray. Jokic MVP is out. Then Memphis Grizzlies, hell of a series. Number 2 at the Western Conference, defeated Minnesota number 7. Phenomenal Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. Great series. I enjoyed this series 4-2. Ja Morant and the company are in the second round. So in the conference semifinals, Golden State Warriors, Oakland, Memphis Grizzlies number 2. Do you have comments about the first round at the Western Conference and conference semifinals, Phoenix Suns, Dallas, Golden State Warriors, Memphis? Memphis, probably my favorite young team at the Western Conference, and the injuries is the mark of the playoffs thus far at the Western Conference setting, right?
Yeah, you know what? I think the Western Conference has been the best sort of first round playoffs run that we've seen in quite some time on either side. I think it's been awesome. It's been real. Minnesota was quite a surprise. I didn't think they were going to win a single game against Memphis, but they ended up winning two, and they almost won Game 6. So Memphis to me came into this this playoff run, this postseason, as the favorite out West, in my opinion. I didn't think that Phoenix was going to hold up. I thought that, even though they won so many games in the regular season and they looked like a great team, they definitely do, I didn't think that they were going to be able to play the type of basketball that Memphis plays when it comes down to it. But you know what? And this is pretty ignorant and foolish of me. I completely overlooked the Golden State Warriors, and they looked amazing. They look like champions again. And with Klay Thompson being back and healthy, and I mean, I hate to root for the other guys, you know, but that team is just amazing. So I'm happy to see that they're back in a situation where they might be able to get back to the NBA Finals, because they're a likable team, even though if they were playing the Celtics, I would hate them. You know what I mean? So it's just they are making it an interesting situation out West. And on top of that, I mean, you've got a Dallas team that, if Luka Doncic is healthy, he could be one of the best players to grace the NBA Finals in recent memory, anyway, if they can figure out a way to get there. So I don't know. The Western Conference is very interesting to me. I think there's a lot of close series. Both semifinal series are going to be very close, and I wouldn't be surprised to see any of the teams come out of those series. So I'm not prepared to make an actual pick for any of those, to be honest. But I would say that Golden State looks like the team to beat to me overall, and Phoenix is right there as well. But again, coming into the whole thing, I was on Memphis. I thought Memphis was going to be the number one team to beat in the West because of just sort of the way that they grind things out and John Morant being that up-and-coming star. But now that I've seen the first round sort of play out, I'm looking at Golden State again, and that to me would be the most exciting matchup if the Celtics were to get to the finals, is Golden State.
I will say for the symmetry that I would still think Golden State. Well, I Golden State still pick Memphis Grizzlies just for fun, you know. Because the I think that the projected Western Conference Finals were at the beginning of the season, Phoenix Suns, Golden State Warriors. So you know, Phoenix Suns number one, Golden State Warriors slided a little, number three. But like you said, they are championship caliber team. It is not surprise if they are in the finals. If they even win the finals again, it will not be surprise. I don't have the good vibe about this Golden State Warriors team, you know. Klay Thompson is back. Stephen Curry slowly getting back to the starting lineup. You know, they were resting him in the previous rounds, but something feels. I don't have that vibe, you know. Maybe I'm wrong about this team. Something is missing. They are missing James Wiseman, I think, out of injury, but he's not playing the whole year. They have the great second unit, good coach, everything. On the other hand, you mentioned Minnesota. I was really impressed with the way Minnesota fought, and it would not be surprised if Minnesota won another game, for example. They were close. I mean, Minnesota is having solid starting five, to tell you the truth, you know. Our friend Greg Monroe is there, but I was impressed with Anthony Edwards. I think he's the future star. If Towns leaves Minnesota, Edwards will be the face of franchise. On the other hand, I was picking Memphis over Minnesota because not only because of Ja Morant, rising star. Bob Bryant said he is without shadow of a doubt top five player in the NBA right now. So is Jason Tatum, because those are the facts, right? I think Goodman and Ryan said I hate to pick those selections. If you are picking Mets top five players right now in the NBA, I mean, they said Giannis without shadow of a doubt. Number one, they said whom? Jokic. They said Embiid, Tatum, and Morant. So you have to pick Morant. But not only Morant. They have great team, great chemistry, and they're well and good coached. Also, they have a really solid bench. For example, their starting five, Ja Morant, Dillon Brooks at point guard, Desmond Bane, small forward. By the way, we could draft that guy, Desmond Bane, in one of previous drafts, but never mind. This is the good shooter who hit 9 of 15 shooting in the last game. Jared Jackson Jr. At 4 at and Adams, Steven Adams at the center. He was injured and Tillman started in front of him. But the guys from the bench met like Jones, Clark, Brandon Clark, who had double-double of the bench, 17 and 11, and Kyle Anderson. They really were the game changers. And to sum up, the great upcoming young team, and I'm always happy to see the two solid young teams to upcoming teams, you know, because that is guaranteed that the NBA will be good in the next years, right?
Yeah, I mean, Memphis looks strong. And, I mean, I would disagree. I wouldn't put Morant in the top five right now. I like Doncic,
okay,
personally. And
okay,
I also think that Karl Anthony Towns is a better player than Ja Morant right now. So I would,
okay,
put him in a better situation. But Morant certainly, over the next couple of years, is going to be in that conversation. So he's right on the fringe. So, but, yeah, Tatum is up there for me. And you mentioned the other guys that are obvious, Giannis and Jokic and Embiid. So
those guys are definitely right there. That was not my pick, but Goodman and Ryan.
No, I know. I just wanted to get it on record.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Towns and Doncic guy than I am for Ja Morant, but Morant is certainly a special player, and I think if he expands his range, his jump shooting ability, then he's going to be unstoppable in the future. So that's something to look out for. But just generally, I mean, Memphis is a team that I think the NBA needs to have them in a good position.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, I've always liked the more defensive game, you know, and this whole flashy finesse game that has sort of come about with LeBron James leading the pack and all this stuff. I'd rather see a team that wants to grind it out. And Memphis in general has always been a grind it out situation. They have always relied on defense and just sort of getting hard offensive possessions. And that's the type of basketball that I like. So if the league is going to have a good young team playing that way, then for me personally, it's going to be good. And I think the fact that Morant is such a superstar, people gravitate towards him. And that is going to be a good thing as well. So I hope he stays in Memphis for a while. I hope that team stays good, because anytime you have a Western Conference team, not named the Los Angeles Lakers, that is going to be a perennial contender. That's good. That's good for me. I'll take that.
Yeah. Phoenix, like I said, Phoenix, Golden State and Memphis, the big three at the Western Conference right now. The number four spot is open.
Right.
I don't know if Dallas is the true number four spot, but never mind. I don't think that they are championship caliber team. Neither is Utah of our Danny Ainge, who is working there in some capacity. Anyway, let's talk about the Eastern Conference.
Come back to me in 5 years. Come back to me in 5 years, and then we'll see if Utah's good, because that's about Danny Ainge's time frame.
Right.
He drafts guys,
right,
and then 5 years later, they are a contender.
Right.
And that's
right.
Good on him. Look at the Celtics team right now. How
right.
many Danny Ainge guys on the roster? Almost all of them. Right down the roster. Four out of the five starters. Grant Williams. Peyton Pritchard was a Danny Ainge guy. Brad only had one draft, and good on Brad. I mean, he had some good offseason moves, right? He made some great offseason moves, bringing in Al Horford. He signed Schroeder, which he then flipped later on to get Derek White and Tice back between the two trades that he made in the middle of the season. So Brad Stevens has done some good things, but you cannot take any credit away from Danny Ainge, because the basis and foundation of this is his mastermind. So give him credit.
Right.
Utah got something good. And so if I'm a Utah fan, I'm disappointed in the way that things have gone the last couple of years, including this year, but I'm happy that I have Danny Ainge on my side.
No, absolutely. Donovan Mitchell said that he will stay in Utah after elimination. So as Rudy Gobert and Utah is there, but they are talking about Quinn Snyder potentially taking over the Los Angeles Lakers, which will be the huge blow for Utah, but we will see what happens there. I totally agree with you about Danny Ainge. I was just mentioning that I'm not sure that Utah Jazz is, watching them, they started the season well, but I never thought that they were the true contenders. That's what I wanted to say. The Denver is the number four, the real number four. But they were, butchered by injuries, and they slided away in the defense. And, Jokic played good, but he didn't have the good roster or the enough help around him. So if Denver is healthy, Denver is the real number four. That's what I wanted to say at this constellation of, forces. Phoenix, Golden State Warriors, Memphis, and Denver. That's the big, that's the big four at the Western Conference. Let's talk about the Eastern Conference a little. Then we will wrap up with you. So in the Eastern Conference first round, Miami defeated Atlanta 4-1. Last year, if I'm correct, Eastern Conference finals for Atlanta, if I didn't imagine that. And this year, first round elimination. Philly defeated Toronto 4-2, but they are without Embiid potentially for the whole series against Miami.
Yeah, that's
It's huge blow for them. So Miami and Philly number 1 and 4 expected semifinals. Milwaukee defeated Chicago. We talk about that in the show 4-1. And Boston defeated Brooklyn 4-0. We talk about that as well. So number 2 Boston, number 3 Milwaukee. Boston favorites there. Miami number 1, Philly number 4. Miami favorites there. For Miami, I want to say that they are number one in the Eastern Conference. They are not getting enough credit, in my opinion, because they had a good season. But they are having injuries as well, because they were without Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry in the last game. They started Victor Oladipo, PJ Tucker, Gabe Vincent, who played for the Celtics in the G League, and Bam Adebayo. In other words, they are having troubles with injuries as well, but potentially Victor Oladipo get back, for example, in the last regular season game, Victor Oladipo is back, and he's capable of putting 20-plus points per game for them in the series. Miami is heavy favorites against Philly without Embiid. For Philadelphia, tough times for our Doc Rivers. Bob Brown mentioned that he wants Doc Rivers to succeed, because if he fails with Philadelphia, his legacy will be remembered as a coach who failed with couple of big teams like Los Angeles and Philadelphia, and what other team he was, I forgot. So he wants, Bobran wants Doc Rivers to succeed with Philly at least to the Eastern Conference Finals, but he's afraid that Rivers will lose. So am I. James Harden looks nothing like James Harden from the past, right?
Yeah, Philadelphia is an interesting case right now because people were thinking that they were gonna lose after being up 3-0, and it was looking like they might until they had a 30-point lead in Game 6 and left Embiid in the game, and now he's out. So I don't know, man. I don't know if you believe in karma, but I kind of do a little bit. It seems like a crazy thing to think about, but I feel like the basketball gods don't mess around. And that sort of points also to the Celtics, and if I can tie things back to them, I always will. Mm-hmm. But they said, no, let's go get the 2 seed. Let's bring on whoever it is. Everybody was afraid of Brooklyn. Everybody was afraid of Milwaukee. They tried to avoid each other, blah, blah, blah. Celtics said, no, we're going to win as many games as we can. We're going to try and get home court. And I think they've kind of been rewarded for that. I think they approached the Rob Williams injury in the right manner, and they are being rewarded for that right now as well. So they need to ride this out and sort of continue on the right path and not mess around, you know. Don't screw around. Don't rest guys don't get involved in any of that. And I think that some of that may have bit Philly a little bit. And now Embiid is out for at least 5 days. He's going to definitely miss the first 2 games of the series. And some people would say that they were going to lose those games in Miami anyway. But yeah, I would say that if they had Embiid, they could split. And then it's a series, right? And that's all you need to do as a road team is split.
We don't have injury reports for Miami. Sorry for interrupting you, Kyle Lowry Jimmy Butler. If Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler are out, whom are you taking in the first 2 games? I'm taking 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, if they're both out, then it's probably 1-1. But I would honestly still lean Miami because I think
Miami
they've got some. Score and Bam Adebayo is still one of the better players in the series.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly need to see something from James Harden before I believe in him as a player. I've never believed in him as a player, especially when it comes down to crunch time. Much like Kyrie didn't want to come back to Boston and he folded. I'm not so sure that James Harden really wants to grind out another 12 wins. 20 games over the next couple, who knows, maybe more, 30 games if they have a lot of 7-game series. It would be 21 is the rest of the games that he would have to play to win the NBA Finals with all 7-game series. So I don't know if he's the type of player that really wants to do that. And when it comes down to it, I don't think that they are the better team in general.
Mm-hmm.
So even with all the injuries, I still lean Miami. And I have the Celtics over Philadelphia, too, if it came down to that. But Miami is a team that sort of scares me a little bit because I think that they have the mentality to get under the Celtics' skin. And as good as the Celtics' defense has been, I think Miami's defense is just as good when they want to be.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the biggest threat right there because if the Celtics face a team that is doing the same things that they are and – I'm just not sure that they would be able to overcome some of that stuff on the offensive end. But I still, if I had to, would pick the Celtics against Miami at this point as well. So I'm expecting the Celtics to go to the NBA Finals, and I hope I'm not wearing my green goggles. And I'm not saying it's going to be an easy road. It'll be a 6 or 7 game series, close games. They're going to have to grind it out. But I expect them to be there, to be honest.
Oh, right. That's a real expectation. And by the way, the odds makers are expecting as well. Like I mentioned, I think somebody at your podcast mentioned as well, it will come to the point that the healthiest team will be in the finals and will win the finals. And at the Eastern Conference, that's the Boston Celtics. That's a surprise, but you mentioned the basketball gods, so I think that definitely we deserve to be the healthiest team in the NBA because we were one of the teams with the most injuries the last 5 years. So, I mean, it is time basketball gods to return us the favor a little, you know. So if everything is right, the finals and the title is not impossible, even though, for example, if we face Golden State Warriors that you mentioned in the finals, it will be a really, you know, strong challenge. That's why I prefer Memphis Grizzlies or Phoenix Suns over Golden State Warriors for potential finals. But you mentioned
Miami. Those are all road series. Those are also all road series. So don't forget
all
that. And that's
series.
Something that I think Celtics could have done a little bit better had they had a better start to the season. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they just plow through that
right.
stuff.
Right. About Miami, one sentence and we'll let you go. I totally agree. They had Pat Riley, one of our arch rivals in the 80s, as you know, Los Angeles Lakers coach, and he created their championship teams. He's general manager there, the man for basketball operations. They have championship coach, Eric Spoelstra. You can love him or hate him, but he knows how to coach the team. They have, you mentioned, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is playing out of his mind, man. He's having better this season than the previous season. I know that you love Jimmy Butler. I was never a Jimmy Butler guy, but I need to recognize that Jimmy Butler is still one of elite players. I would not maybe take him as top 10. Maybe he is top 10. You know, he's having the best this season than the previous season. But watching him in the previous series against Atlanta, taking over the games, like scoring 40, I mean, really impressive. Never mind Atlanta on the other end, but Jimmy Butler is really
a
elite player.
I just love his mentality. Yeah, I just love his mentality. You know, he does what he has to do. He does what's asked of him. And there was one story about how he has been deferring to his teammates quite a bit, and he doesn't want to be the main scorer anymore. And he thinks that he can win a title by deferring to the team around him. And he's probably right about that. But the team pushed back and said, no, we need you to score. We want you to be that scorer. Go out and get some buckets, Jimmy. And he did. And that's part of the reason they won that series. So you're right. He's been balling out of his mind. He wants the title real bad. But you know who else wants the title real bad? Al Horford. Got to drop his name out there because we haven't talked about him much at all. And before I leave you here, I just got to say that he has been a real important part to the Celtics. And I think that he has been a mentor to these guys. He's back again. They listen to him. They trust him. And not only that, but he's contributing on floor as well. He's knocking down shots. He spreads the floor. And I think that of all the guys that I've been watching in the playoffs, he is the one that's really pushing to get that title. I'm not sure if he's ready to retire. He's obviously towards the end of his career, but I think he wants it real bad. And if it comes down to it, he's gonna give his all. And I'm on Al Horford's side for sure. Definitely the consummate professional, and he makes the guys around him better. And that's the type of player that the Celtics need right now. So I think that Al is going to be a huge part of this playoff run.
Excellent stuff. I will not hold you any further. Matt, thanks for coming and really enjoyed talking to you. And by the way, I think that you enjoyed as well talking about the Celtics, man. So,
yes, sir.
I mean,
yes, sir. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Igor. I'm sorry that it hasn't been as often as we used to.
Never mind. When you have time for us, please come. This is your home as well. You're our friend from the beginning, from 10 years, since 2012, one of our first guests, and we really, really enjoy talking to you always. All the best in your work. I hope that you will reappear in some shape and form at the CLNS Media, you know, as a voice. I know that you're a man behind the scenes and at their side, but I mean, I really miss your shows. And I think that all CLNS public is really missing your show, man. So if you have, if you have time, I wish to hear you at CLNS Media as well. Okay, Matt, so we really hope that the revamped Celtics will win the title finally and will retain the number one place of all the times from the Los Angeles Lakers. And by the way, Los Angeles Lakers are out of the playoffs, which is real pleasure for us.
As well. Yep, I love it. It's good stuff. All right, Igor. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Congratulations on ending your Blog Talk Radio run. Have a good one, man. I'll go self.
Right. We will continue on the StreamYard. Follow us at your pages. Matt, all the best to you and CLS Radio and go Celtics, okay? Lou, stay with me. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Excellent. Let me play one audio break to grab, to grab water, and we will talk a little about the playoffs, okay?
Let's keep it going here, guys. So the Warriors remain atop the favorites to win it all with their 3-1 series lead over the Nuggets. The Celtics have climbed to second through following the sweep of KD, Kyrie, and the Nets, and Phoenix hanging in there in third, even in Booker's absence. So where do the Celtics rank amongst the NBA's best teams right now, Stephen A.?
Me personally, I got them right now as the best team in the Eastern Conference. That's how I feel about them because of the way they play defense collectively. That's where I'm at with it. I understand the presence of Giannis Antetokounmpo and how he can neutralize anything or nullify anything. I also am watching Miami, and quietly, we all know I'm rooting for the Miami Heat. I mean, it ain't quiet no more. I'm just not denying it. Damn it, I'm rooting for the Miami Heat, okay? I'm rooting for the Miami Heat. That's where I want to be in June and May. I want to be because we got the Eastern Conference Finals. ESPN has the Eastern Conference Finals this year. So, damn it, I'm not apologizing. I want Miami to win. But the bottom line is that when you look at Boston and the way they play defense collectively, along with the emergence of a Jason Tatum, with a Jaylen Brown and what have you, it made me a little bit nervous last night once Jason Tatum fouled out from that game. I'm just of the mindset that when you really, really look at it right now, because of the way Boston plays defense, because you got two dudes that can give you a bucket, because of the defensive wizardry of Marcus Smart and the coaching of Udoka, I'm just of the mindset that right now, I shouldn't say coaching because even though I love Udoka a lot, I love me some Eric Spoelstra as well, who I consider to be one of the best in the game. But the bottom line, I think right now, if somebody said to me, I mean, who you rolling with, it would be Boston. I'm hoping Miami, though.
Well, Boston is the best team in the NBA. Let's make that very clear.
In the NBA?
In the NBA. You heard what I said.
When did you decide that, in all seriousness? I'm not messing with you.
No, really, because, Molly, think about this. You remember we were on the show and I said that I would pick Boston to be my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But the only reason that I didn't was because of the injury of Robert Williams.
Yep.
But what the Celtics have shown me is no other team in the NBA that's in the postseason that would have swept and did what they just did to the Brooklyn Nets. That's how great they are defensively. And I know we keep talking about how good or how much of a juggernaut Golden State the Warriors are. But still and all, offense win you games, defense win you championships. And when I look at these guys for their defensive lineup, it's no other team that have the perimeter defenders like the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum right now is the best two-way player in the game. Jaylen Brown, we know how he locks down defensively. And don't get me started on Marcus Smart and what he could do to a person. And then you have Big Al Horford, Robert Williams, Grant Williams, and Daniel Tice, who all the defensive-minded people and are capable of sliding those puppies. So when I look at this Celtic team, I'm looking at their defense and I'm saying, who want to face them? Who can't they stop? Go look at the season series when they played against the Miami Heat. I think the Celtics was up 3-1 in that season series. Look, Jason Tatum is the top three player in the NBA. This mean version of Jason Tatum, nobody wants to see. And Jaylen Brown playing with a chip on his shoulder, the way that both of them are coexisting on the offensive end, nobody wants to see this team, bro, because nobody would have ever exposed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving like these brothers exposed them. Not one team that's in the playoffs would have swept this Brooklyn Nets team but the Boston Celtics.
I disagree. I think the Golden State Warriors would have swept them.
They ain't sweep Denver.
So what? I mean, listen, first of all, the altitude in Denver, certainly that's number one. Number two, they sat up there and they took for granted because they knew they had him and what have you. We got all of that. That stuff happens. All right, Jokic, 36 and 36 plus. I mean, we know what they bring to the table. The point that I'm trying to make, I didn't sit up there and say, excuse me, you got to remember, basketball character. Denver showed it. What did Coach Malone say after they lost game three? He said, yo, we going to find out what we made of. You going to fight? Or you going to just lay down and let this season come to an end? Are you going to fight or what? And Denver stood up because they got that kind of basketball character. Let's give credit where credit is due. We'd be talking a lot more about Denver's Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. were healthy. Okay, we'd be talking a lot more about them. They are simply, they got two of their three stars injured. That's the reality of the situation. But you look at Barton and Morris and Olsen, they're not scrubs. They're not stars, but they're not scrubs. I know you didn't say that, but I'm saying they're not stars, but they're not scrubs. They can play, and, you know, they got a lot of heart. They ain't scared, and they go out there, and they're going to fight you, all right? And that's what they did in game four. I'm telling you, it's not about you're looking at Brooklyn from a talent perspective. I'm looking at Brooklyn from a character perspective. When you talk about nobody else would have beaten them, I say nobody else would have swept them, I say otherwise. And I say otherwise because we've had questions about the collective character, and it's not to knock any player specifically outside of Kyrie and Ben Simmons. We understand that they're dealing with a lot. But in the end, because of the distractions both have caused throughout this season, they have been a dysfunctional bunch in Brooklyn, and I think they could have been had once they lost game one. You just saw things just snowball from there.
Yeah, you know why it snowballed from there? Because of the Celtics and their tenacity and their defense, because they knew they was outmanned. Stephen A.
You also brought up Kyrie. You brought up Kyrie and how obviously he was going, you know, he's fasting and all that stuff, so the level of energy he didn't have. You brought that stuff up. We know what the Ben Simmons story is. You know that.
Yeah, but Stephen A., guess what? It ain't too many Marcus Smarts on the other teams. This is the defensive player of the year. That's why it hurt Kyrie Irving. Yeah, he was faster, but it's not a dog like a Marcus Smart. You know what I'm saying? Like I told you before, hey, man, you throw Marcus Smart in the cage with five lions, you know what you're going to get? Six lions. Because that's the type of heart that he plays with. That's the type of dog that he is. But Stephen A., this is what I want to tell you. Kevin Durant is a two-time champion, two-time finals MVP.
Correct.
Kyrie Irving is a champion. Kyrie Irving is battle-tested. Kyrie Irving hit one of the greatest shots in finals history. Okay? Kyrie Irving was down 3-1. I don't think you're understanding that the Boston Celtics made Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving quit. They made them quit. They made them quit, Stephen A., quit. Well, they didn't even want to play no more. They were shying away from the basketball, going hide in the corner. No other team has the perimeter play on the defensive side of things to make a Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant quit. No other team.
What you're missing, Kendrick Perkins, is you're thinking the Boston Celtics made them quit. One could argue they quit a long time before the playoffs arrived. Maybe not as an individual player like Kevin Durant. But when you look at all the nonsense that was taking place this year, the reality of the situation is you can make that argument that they've been planned their vacation.
Yeah, but I can't say that because they fought so hard to get into the play-in tournament and then win the play-in games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I can't roll with that.
Okay.
Because they fought so hard to get to that point.
Okay.
And we're live. Luis Tenore, Igor Mitic, Celtics Talk Radio final episode at blogtalkradio.com. We are moving to another platform, StreamYard. Follow us at our pages, Celtics Talk Radio, Vivid Green, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, and you will find out where we are. Luis,
will you send me the link when you move over there?
Yeah. I mean, just,
okay.
just, uh, just follow us. You're the member of the Celtics Talk Radio, and we will present there the links. We will be at the StreamYard, the new studio that William Perkins and the others, we are working, the new quality and something like that. But let's recap. You heard Kendrick Perkins, and you heard Stephen A. Smith. You heard that we are previewing Bucks. I don't want to talk about the Nets. You mentioned them. I mean, but the Nets, they are losers. And I mean, we're talking about the teams that are still in the playoffs. So was you surprised about the Celtics sweeping the Nets? I didn't personally expect that. I said hard six, but most likely Celtics in seven. I expected a bigger fight from the Nets. What do you say?
Despite the fact that they were swept, they were competitive in all four games. I thought, and they had a shot to win at least the first two. I mean, but, you know, they just couldn't hold, they let their guard down, I think, in the closing seconds of game one, because they had that game in the bag until the last 3 seconds left, and they blew that. And, you know, with a 17-point lead in the second game, I thought it would be a shoo-in, you know, to get a win. It's not often you blow that kind of lead in a playoff spot, but they seem to just choked away in the second half. I mean, it was competitive throughout, you know, the whole four games, but I think, you know, the Nets were just, you know, too small in size, and Boston was a lot quicker with that, you know, quicker motion. So it was obvious that the Celtics were able to take him in four games. You know, but a lot of people were thinking it's got to be, you know, a much tighter series than that. That's what I thought at first. I mean, for crying out loud, they were favored to go into the finals this year. And, well, with all what happened between Durant and, of course, Kyrie not playing half the season, and the big trade, which Simmons didn't do anything for us at all because they never even played, and the COVID, et cetera. So there was a lot of factors that built in to what happened with the Nets this season, and just couldn't manage in the playoffs. There was just too much off, you know, off the court drama as it was on.
My question to you: do you agree with Stephen A. Smith the Nets quit before this season? Before this series, because of internal problems and the kind of stuff that you mentioned. And Ben Simmons, I really don't know what to say about this man. Is this man competitive at all? Because,
no.
I mean, I don't know what to make of this man anymore. What can we say about him? Is this man wants to play basketball at all, or he's just screwing around with his life, with his team, with everything.
Believe me, he is screwing around. He's been screwing around ever since he came in the league, period. I mean, he has done nothing in his pro career. And showing, I mean, this guy just does not want to play. So when we got him, we got a scrap pile when we got the trade, because he didn't do anything for us, and he never even played. So we wasted half the season on this bum. I mean, get rid of him.
Uh-huh. Right.
I never liked him.
Right.
He was the most overhyped player when he got drafted, and think he was going to be the next great thing since sliced bread. Please. He was anything but. I mean, his first season, he got injured before he even played and was out the first season of his career, and he hasn't done much or anything since then. This guy is a total bum.
Right. And
with a capital B.
The Nets are having problems, Lou, because they are committed in money with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Ben Simmons and the others, Andre Drummond. So, I mean, Seth Curry. They don't have room to improve the players' personnel. They don't have money in salary cap. You know, they need to figure it out what to do with the players and how to add the new players to the team. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, we gotta do better than this. But I also think, of course, you know, when Harden was sent to Philadelphia, that was a big blow to us too. I mean, he wasn't happy where he was before with the Rockets. Then he came here, and they say he wasn't happy here, so he went across the river to Philadelphia. And he's giving them, you know, something to be happy about. You know, that was the first big blow right there with Harden leaving us to go to our rival team. Yeah.
Right. I was talking with Matt Drury about the playoffs. I mentioned the semifinals, like Phoenix Suns, Dallas Mavericks at Western Conference, plus Golden State Warriors, Memphis Grizzlies, Eastern Conference number one, Miami against Philadelphia number four, number two, Boston against number three, Milwaukee, reigning champs. The storyline are the injuries in the NBA, right? We mentioned Ben Simmons and his injury. Joe Harris was injured for the Nets. Atlanta had injuries. Chicago Bulls, they are having their injuries, Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, whatever. Milwaukee Bucks, George Hill and Chris Middleton will not play at all the second round series. Miami, Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, injuries. Denver played without Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray, second best, third best option at the team. Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker is injured. Golden State Warriors, James Wiseman injured. Stephen Curry was injured, returned to the series from the bench. The storyline of these playoffs are the injuries. So it seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, you correct me, that the team that is most, that is the healthiest right now will win the title. What do you think about it?
Absolutely, because you're going to need that, you know, as you go further in the playoffs. And I mean, one injury by one of the major players could really set the team back. Philadelphia lost, one of their big players, and that could be a very disadvantage. So I think it's
right.
A chance that Boston could really,
at least for the first
two games. Yeah,
Embiid gone. Joel Embiid out. Right. Kyle Lowry injured. Jimmy Butler injured. Questionable.
Mm-hmm.
So the injuries are the storyline right now, right?
Yes. And that could be a big advantage for Boston.
For Boston? Yes. For Miami, you think? I don't have the injury report for Miami. I talk with Matt. I'm taking Miami in this series with or without Embiid. I'm saying just that if Jimmy Butler and if Kyle Lowry are out and Joel Embiid is out for Philadelphia, in the first two games of the series, I'm saying there is a chance that Philadelphia steals one game. It will be 1-1 most likely. Don't you think? No?
No, not with them beat out like that, no. No, I don't think they'll hold a candle in the series. I think they're in a lot of trouble here. This is your best player. Now is not the time to have your best players injured.
Right. Okay. I'm taking Miami anyway because Miami is having deeper bench and the players like Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, better team, better coach anyway. Philadelphia, I'm questioning their mentality and many people are questioning Doc Rivers. Embiid is having MVP season and James Harden, man, do you still believe that he is MVP caliber player because it seems like he's slowing down, maybe because of injuries, and maybe just age is coming to eat his talent and his speed. Mm. And he's not the same, you know? So many question marks in Philadelphia, don't you think? Right.
I do. I mean, you know, age and injuries always, you know, catch up, especially late in your career. But that's to be expected. You know, you're not the young rookie you once were. You know, probably putting up though a good 20 points a night and whatnot and rebounds. You know, everything catches up over time. You know, and
right.
The more you're older, the more the injuries are tougher to heal and whatnot. So it's it's perfectly natural. You're not going to be
right.
the star player you once were.
Right. I must ask you about Boston and Milwaukee. How do you see, do you agree that Boston Celtics are the favorites? Can you see the chance that Milwaukee Bucks can surprise the Boston Celtics and defeat them without Chris Middleton and without the home court? They are the reigning champs, bottom line.
I think the Bucks are going to be in trouble. Not to mention, though, but it is awfully tough to repeat as, you know, a champion in any league. But, like I said, injuries do play a big factor, especially in the postseason. And if you don't have all your weapons together, it could be a quick exit. I'm not saying that it will be, but it could be. I mean, it could end in 4 or 5 games, as we get it stands.
Right.
So we just have to, yeah. But I don't want to jinx it, so I'll just leave it at that.
How do you see for the end, we're closing a couple of minutes, how did you see the Celtics second part of the year since the new year, completely different team turning around, the favorites to come out of the East to win the title right now, looking like the best team in the NBA right now? What do you say? Are you surprised? Do you agree with all the prizes to the Celtics team, or maybe not?
Not really. I mean, you know, they'd have a slow start, but, you know, this is the Celtics here, and I've seen teams that, you know, start with slow starts before and, you know, come back and, you know, not only with the playoffs, but, you know, get to the finals and whatnot. So I'm not too surprised with the lineup they have had, you know, and they were my sleeper pick for this year. So this doesn't surprise me, you know, at all. I wish I could say the same for the Sacramento Kings.
Bravo.
But forget it. Yeah.
Sacramento Kings. They are just. I don't
dumpster fire.
They're just what can I say? They are just
pathetic.
Some dark tunnel. Yes, they are at some dark tunnel, and it doesn't seem like they're going to come out anytime soon. Anyway, Lou. Thanks. We must finish the show. We must play Gino Time. I was without my co-host, but with excellent guests. Thanks to Mike Dinon, Matt Rudy. Thank you, Lou. Tell me for the end where the people can find you at Kevin's Radio, probably, right?
Well, we're on the dial pad service. The dial pad means we switched over there last July, almost a year now. We're still on the air 5 to 7. I'm on the air 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday afternoons. Number to call is 512-543-4662. And every week we have a wide range of topics in the sports world, from basketball to football to NFL, even USFL we cover now.
Right.
Playoffs we're doing. We'll next week cover horse racing, et cetera, et cetera. So if you got time between 5 and 7 Saturday, you can always feel free to call into the show. And hopefully when you get your set up,
right.
You know, I'll be looking to continue on with this show. Just send me all the information we
get. Right. I mean, we will be at the StreamYard. Just search us at Facebook page. We will say there, Celtics Talk Radio page at the Facebook, and we will put the links to every single show. Okay, Lou. Thanks to you. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to everybody that participated in this show. Talk soon. The next week we will have the show. So the Celtics are tomorrow playing the second round against the Bucks, 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm doing live play-by-play at Public Green Celtics Fans Forum. We are the Celtics Talk Radio. And right now, the Gino time, favorite part of the show. Okay, Gino, get us out of here, please. And tomorrow, I hope that I will hear Gino in TD Garden. Gino time.